to WRAF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
All right, thank you very much. Hey, Jolene, how are you tonight?
Hey, Peter, I'm doing quite well, and you?
You had a little run-in with a llama today, huh?
I had a run-in with an entire petting zoo. I know it sounds weird, but I was on the job today.
Yeah.
I was right next to a petting zoo that got smellier by the hour.
Yeah. You know, we got to redo our opener.
We do?
Yeah, because it says what? Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show.
What happened?
It is it. This Night Call is actually America's longest-running talk show.
Well, you know what? I never thought of it that way.
Hey, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Maybe you weren't here when we were talking about it.
I don't think I was here for
actually,
that. I would remember something that big.
We don't get listed like that because it's not a daily show.
Right.
But... hey, a talk show is a talk show.
Thank you.
We always give the phone numbers, although Mr. Announcer just gave them. This is Night Call with me, Peter Werby, and Jolene Jordan, my partner in thought crime.
Absolutely.
And we'd like to get your call, because this is a phone-in talk show. This is WRIF's public service program, where you get to express your opinions, and we get to hog the mic. Well, let's be honest and fair about it.
Who's this we? I kid.
Yes, I know. 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And for the bashful, and if the lines are filled, which they are not right now, calltalkyes@yahoo.com, which is an email address. Of course, calltalkyes@yahoo.com.
And we'll check it throughout the show, maybe read it on the air,
short,
if it's short.
Short, yeah. And Facebook friends, always welcome at facebook.com/nightcall. Now, someone wrote us, right? We're in the modern age. And Anne from Florida writes in. She listens on the Internet or a podcast. That's right, because thanks to Stephanie, who cured our problems and also answers our phones when you
yes.
call 313-298-WRIF, we have our interviews. And again, what do you mean our? My interviews.
Yeah. Who's this we?
Yeah.
Peter, for those, say it's the first time listening to the show. We do 2 hours live, and then
yeah.
there is an hour of recorded interviews. They weren't making on the podcast. They're back.
And the podcast, you can go to WRIF.com, and you get the podcast sent to you. No fee or anything like that. So anyway, Anne writes, I listen to you and Jolene Jordan every week. I love to hear you as a couple on your program. Oh, our partners would. It just relaxes me. I've looked at your Facebook page and your other page trying to find a snail mail address. I thought it might be nice to drop y'all. Yes, we still say y'all down here. A postcard or small thank you gift from Florida. Oh, I don't remember that. Just a postcard, Anne. By the way,
yeah,
Peter,
there's rules against that, right?
You're among my favorite atheists. I'm a believer that there is something beyond this messy world, but I don't feel certain about anything. Well, there may or there may not be. I don't know. hugs to you and Jolene from Anne. And then she writes, I love the name Jolene, which is Jolene's name, not Jolene or
Julian
or anything like that.
Anything
yeah.
like that.
It's J-U-L-I-N-E. So you don't know, or have you ever done this? I looked up the meaning of Jolene.
No.
I don't know if you want to hear this.
No,
it's good. It's great. It's great. It says the meaning is a variant of Julia, J-U-L-I-A.
Oh,
and
which
the meaning,
is cool. Julia Child.
Yeah. The meaning of Jolene is youthful. Jove's child. Jove, one of the...
Well, is that not the truth?
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
It's absolutely correct.
Yes. Jove, I'm trying to remember who Jove was. It was either a Greek or a Roman god or goddess. Five love names. Must be a goddess, because all the rest of them...
Of course it's a goddess, Peter.
Yeah. Well, there was gods back then.
Yeah, but this is my name.
Got you there. Jolene is an uncommon first name for women and an equally uncommon last name for both men and women. You did not make the top 1,000 names.
Oh, I believe it. I've never, ever met another Jolene, but I'm glad to know that I'm a youthful goddess.
Yeah.
That they actually, you know, my mom named me after what I really am.
There you go. Like, there's a name.
I kid again.
There's one that I've actually seen. Latrina.
Okay.
Think about that.
Oh.
Latrina. You got beat out by Latrina.
Well, Latrina can have it.
Yes. Okay. All right.
So,
are we on the air yet?
We are.
All right.
Here.
Oh yeah, snail mail. Right. I mean, so here is Ann in Florida saying, can we be sent snail mail? You go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, PeterWerbe.com. Go down on the right, and that'll tell you where to send it. Or it's just care of WRIF, and it's 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, 48220.
And no hate mail, please, right?
Oh, I like it. Yeah, send hate mail.
Really?
Well, actually, don't send it through the mail. Email it.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, send it to Peter. I don't want any part of it.
I love it. I love to read it on the air.
Actually, Peter, you always forward me the real juicy ones,
yeah,
which I really enjoy reading.
I mean, I just wonder, do these people, I mean, how long we've been in this business,
yeah,
they actually think we're... You know, I always write back, oh, you really know how to hurt a guy.
Oh, yeah. They think that you have to develop a real backbone to be in this kind of a business on so many levels. And we've both been doing it a long time. We're kind of over it.
Remember when, I think I've said this on the air, my friend told me just because someone's trying to insult you, you don't have to be insulted?
Absolutely.
And that's exactly where that's at.
That's a tough concept to get behind. It really is.
Well, when it's someone, you know, it's when it's a personal relationship, it's real hard.
Yeah.
But with people like that, I mean, I always use this example. The two, someone who said that they saw my photograph at PeterWerbe.com, and they don't know how I have the nerve to put my photograph there. I'm one of the ugliest human beings they've ever seen.
Now, wait. This has been a long time. And you're still remembering this.
That doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me. What makes you think about it? And my favorite, though, you have one of the worst, most grating, horrid voices I've ever heard in radio. Why do they keep you on?
And this is one person in
No, this was two.
Two people in a 40-plus year career on the radio. It'll be okay.
I started when I was 10.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
You did. Record young.
I like this, too. Now, we got, so here, Ann wants to send us snail mail.
Okay.
And we've gotten two pieces of snail mail. One from Kathleen.
Recently, huh?
Yeah. And thank you for the interviews on last week's show. And then, well, I mean, actually, I don't want to read the whole thing. And then a longtime listener, Carl, who writes, Dear Pete and Joe.
All right. I like it.
And he is a vet. He's 80 years old. And he says he's been, remember last week we were talking about the Veterans Administration Hospital?
Sure.
That socialism, right? Socialized medicine.
Yeah.
Thankfully for the vets. And some of the guys were calling in and said, you know, didn't work very well. He says he's been treated by doctors and medical teams with the best VA personnel. I don't know of any vets that were not treated with the best of care. This is in the VA hospital in John R. Oh, it must be down in that medical center, right?
Okay.
So he's happy with it. And thank you, Carl, for listening for all these years.
Yes, thanks, Carl.
Well, I suspect that a lot of the WRIF listenership, I don't know. How do I know? But I'm just suspecting. That's why I say it like that. Really aren't getting too excited or exercised about these upcoming elections at the beginning of November.
They just want to rock, Peter.
Well, people really did get excited about the 2008 election.
2 years ago, yes. Remember that.
And the kind of enthusiasm that Barack Obama engendered in so many people, particularly younger people, was really amazing. And I knew deep in my heart, even though I voted for the man, that this was going to go away pretty quickly, that there was no capacity within the system as it's currently defined. Was there room for anyone, no matter what one saw as a mandate, to really make significant changes?
Well, and especially after the prior 8 years, Peter.
The guy wrecked everything.
Everything.
And the definitions of the American political system are such that to make a 180-degree turn, and Bush made a pretty sharp right turn. And the idea that Bush or that that Obama would make a 180-degree turn and go absolutely back the other way just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
It wasn't in the cards. And probably if he tried, it wouldn't have even worked. In other words, if he would have said, look, both these wars are insane and I'm getting the troops out like immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It wouldn't have worked. But one of the things that people keep talking about, this is pretty interesting. Whose show? Oh, on the Randy Rhodes show, I heard this. National talk show host. And there's something called the Obamameter scorecard. It's, where is the website here? PolitiFact, that's PolitiFact.com. And they talked about Obama's promises. And they have promises kept, the ones he's compromised on. I mean, think about the medical bill, which turns out to be, you know, pretty bad so far because he had to compromise.
I mean, he did.
Yeah. And then promises broken. So many people talk about the fact that he's broken all these promises. Well, according to this scorecard, that he's kept 122 promises, that he's compromised on 39. And people, that's called bipartisanship. That he's broken 22 promises, and which is not bad for a politician.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That 82 of the promises are stalled, of course, because of the party of Dr. No.
Yeah, right.
Right. The Republicans, and there's 238 of them in the works. And then they list all of them, which I don't even think I'm going to go through. But you know what? I mean, when you sell people a bill of goods, and to some extent, even maybe the intent wasn't there, that when you say change with big capital letters and quote marks around it and exclamation points, people think that the world is going to be altered, that it's coming pretty close to a revolution. And we haven't seen anything like that. I mean, with these, you know, with the Bush giveaway to the banks and what have you, the TARP fund, and the Obama stimulus, even though it's put us more into debt, I mean, I think at least the system was saved from collapse.
Stabilized,
yeah,
right.
From all, and what was the figure? I forgot, the hundreds of thousands of people that were losing their job every month, and now it's down to like 40,000, which is still unacceptable.
Was it like 500,000 a month?
It was something like that, yeah. I mean, it was absolutely extraordinary. We were heading straight to the cellar, straight to the depression.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know that Obama had great amounts of wiggle room, and I don't want to defend this guy. I mean, I said, where did I just read this? Oh, yeah, something I'd written for the Metro Times, looking back at the last 10 years. And it was pretty clear that that things weren't going to change dramatically, and that as I said, people expected that. So what's going to happen now? There's an election coming up, and all of the pundits, all of the news cast, because this is what forms reality. Remember, I was saying the other week that power is the ability to define reality.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what reality really is. If you can define it in your terms, well, then that's what it becomes. So there's all these stories, special report, blue collar, unemployed, and seeing red, which means, of course, that people are going to blue collar workers are going to vote for the Republicans, the protectors of the wealthy. And they talk about Scott Stevenson from Ferndale, Michigan, right here.
Oh, yeah.
Our neighbor. This is our address. I said Detroit, 48220. It's actually Ferndale.
Yes.
You can mail either one. But this is interesting in this story. One of the people voting Republican on November 2nd will be Stevenson's mom, 63-year-old Joan Stevenson, the daughter of a machinist and self-described Jack Kennedy Democrat. She voted for Obama in 2008 but has been disappointed by how little his administration's policies have helped unemployed workers like her son. She says, the Democratic Party isn't what it used to be for us. The philosophy used to be if the Democratic Party was in power, everybody got a piece of the pie. And if the Republicans were in power, the rich got a piece of the pie. Now, nobody is getting a piece of the pie. This is a statement born out of deep concern and desperation and coming to just a wrong conclusion. I wonder if could be Scott Stevenson or his mom. Joan, if you're listening, give us a call. Tell us this. Well, if you say nobody's getting a piece of the pie, why would she be voting for these Republicans? And if she says the Democratic Party was in power, everybody got a piece of the pie, which wasn't entirely true, but they got a little more of the crumbs than you did if the Republicans were in power, when only the rich got the whole pie.
The media got a hold of her.
Yeah, yeah. So you see this all over. There's another article. This time, this was in, where was it? Somewhere or other, Yahoo News. In the New York Times, an article, unions find members slow to rally behind Democrats. Now, I've said is that the people that generally vote Democratic, and I'm not talking about the politicians, I'm talking about the average person, the base of the Democratic Party, the people with a decent consciousness, and those values, even though oftentimes the Democratic Party, the politicians and the policies they carry out when they're in office don't reflect this, these are generally people that have a desire for a fair world where everyone is treated decently, where, you know, a world of peace, of tolerance. I mean, the exact opposite, 180-degree opposite of what the Republicans bring about and often what the Republican rank and file actually want. So when we get disappointed, well, we say, usually, unlike Scott Stevenson's mom, we just stay home. Figure the hell with it.
That's,
you know,
true.
Because these guys aren't doing what they say. The Republicans, they don't care what kind of scandal, how insane these candidates are that get put up, what they're exposed as, how contradictory they are to everything they supposedly stand for. The rank and file Republicans just go out there and vote for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I've been saying right along, if and this is a big if still, if the Republicans pick up a lot of seats, it's not going to be because there are a lot of people like Scott Stevenson's mom that actually switch parties, but rather because a good sections of the base of the Democratic Party are going to stay home. And I'm of two minds. I'm of actually two minds about that. Well, maybe I should throw this in. Let's put that aside for a second. There is this guy, Sal Russo, who's hosted, who's a fundraiser for the Republican, for the teabaggers, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So Mr. Russo's group, based in California, is now the single biggest independent supporter of Tea Party candidates, raising more than $5.2 million in donations since January 2009, according to federal records, right? Except, so you'd think the old teabaggers are really well-heeled, huh? The only thing is, at least $3 million of that total has since been paid to Mr. Russo's political consulting firm or to one controlled by his wife, according to the same federal documents. So if you're contributing to the teabaggers, it's just going to these scamsters. Yeah.
Don't buy into it, especially this crazy woman out in Delaware, this Christine O'Donnell, who got the GOP nomination.
The one that's against masturbation?
Yes. I listened to that interview when she said it. What? Like, actually, there's an interview of her actually talking about the masturbation thing.
She was
taking away from the woman, and
right.
What do you need me for?
Yeah.
If you're going to masturbate, what do you need me for?
That's what she said.
Yeah, she
right.
did. I heard yeah. it.
I saw
it.
And she was on, I didn't realize.
She was on Bill Maher.
A lot.
Yeah, and she said that she dabbled in witchcraft.
Now she's saying, oh, it's just a joke.
Just like Sarah Palin, just ha ha.
But everything
she's like,
she's
SP Junior, SP Light, but crazy. Maybe.
Everything she said was a lie. She didn't have the master's degree. She said that she just all of, you know.
She didn't pay her student loans for 20 years.
No apparent income. All this stuff. Bill Maher, though, has a history of having kind of these nutty right-wing women on. Remember,
yeah.
He used to have, we don't say her name, we used to call her just this woman who we know is in Detroit, the right-wing bitch from hell.
Yes, yeah.
She had a talk show in Detroit, the right-wing bitch from hell.
She did.
And she used to talk about me all the time on this other station. What was it? It's a sports station now, but what was it? It was a talk station for a while.
I don't know.
We don't want to say it?
We don't want to say it.
It's got the same call letters?
Well, you know.
Okay, anyway. So I'm driving one time, and all of a sudden, I turn this on, and the first words that come out of this other station
Peter
Werby, and he's such a fraud.
Isn't that funny?
And he says he's an environmentalist, and he jets all over the world, and he's got a big carbon footprint, and Peter Werby, and I'm thinking, this is amazing.
Well, this is how small-time radio she is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So let's quit talking about her.
Okay. but I forgot my major point. Oh, yeah. Well, the deal is, of course, yeah, it is a little warm in here, isn't it? Thank you. Thank you for doing a little...
Little maintenance. Multitask.
Control. What do you call that?
Environmental control.
Environmental, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So when all you have, and this goes back to... Scott Stevenson's mom, who identifies herself as a Kennedy Democrat, and she's going to vote for Republicans. That appears to be the only game in town. So what's happening? The Democrats haven't solved all the problems in the world, so I got an idea. Let's vote for the Republicans. And then when they haven't solved every problem in 2 years or 4 years, I got an idea. Let's vote for the Democrats. And is there a cycle here, folks, that maybe we ought to think about slicing through? and creating some different alternatives. Now, let me pose this to you. You can call us at 313-298-WRIF. Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan at your service. Stephanie waiting for your call. Still a couple open lines left. I'm of two minds. Where, this whole deal with these tax cuts that Bush put into place that, for his rich buddies.
The top 2%.
Yeah, that is one of the reasons we have this heavy deficit. Well, they're going to expire. And that would mean that that everyone's income tax would, in fact, rise. And but what Obama wants to do is let it rise for 2%, the top 2%, and the bottom 98%, almost everybody. You know, there's like 16,000 families we're talking about. Is that small?
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so that all the middle class, everybody else would get a tax break, and Richie Rich Kid would have to go back to the tax rate that that he and she previously had under, before Bush. And
which, when they're that wealthy, wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, yeah. Renewing the tax cuts, this says, the Associated Press report, for everyone would cost the government. So in other words, what the Republicans want, they don't want to tax the rich. We want to eat the rich, but we're extremists, Jolene and I. Right,
but on many levels.
If you don't tax the rich, renewing the tax cuts for everyone would cost the government almost $4 trillion over the next decade, according to congressional analysis. So, with polls showing broad public anger over spiraling federal deficits, Obama wants to exclude individuals owning over $200,000 and couples making $250,000, who account for about $700 billion of that $4 trillion total. They represent about 3% of the taxpayers. And so, if we don't do that, of course, the deficit just grows. So, why, since these people have so much money? Somewhere or other in here, I had the figures. Oh, yeah. For a family making $1 million a year, they would get a tax increase of $52,000. Hey, too bad. The country's in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they got this enormous tax break, and they didn't do anything with it. They didn't even consume more. I mean, you would think, well, they got more money, they can consume more things. They already have everything. They already are the richest of the rich, and they don't need any more money. So what they would do, they would either just save it, and then when savings didn't provide anything, they began putting it in speculative capital, in other words, investment, which was one of the things that fueled the collapse. So this, is another one of Bush's bright ideas. So let me get back to, who we're going to vote for. So some of these Democrats are getting real nervous, and they're thinking, oh, maybe, people think we're too liberal. They're in these kind of districts that previously were a Republican, but in 08 became Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
So 31 House Democrats, most of whom face tough reelection bids this fall, have signed a letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, urging them to extend expiring tax breaks for all income levels, including the wealthy. So they want to deprive the Treasury of $700 billion. What this means is then to operate, the government will have to borrow more, and our tax dollars, when it's not going to for these endless wars, it means we're going to be paying debt service. So if these are extended to the wealthy, this means you and I are going to be paying more money. Get this? One of them was Michigan Representative Gary Peters, who for some reason was the darling of the liberals. And here's this guy saying, where is this? Oh, yeah. After listening to economists, small businesses, and families over recent weeks, they are concerned that, quote, raising any taxes right now could negatively impact economic growth. This is pure blather.
It sure is.
This is nonsense. This makes no sense whatsoever and is just trying to appealing, I guess, to the part of his constituency that lives in West Bloomfield and Birmingham and what have you. That, who was the guy there before? I can almost say his name. Dan with a K, I think.
Okay.
Anyway, so maybe he's just afraid all the rich people are going to come out and vote against him because they don't want to pay any more taxes. But so should we just say, hey, the hell with Gary Peters, right? He does vote good on civil liberties issues, on things for working people, for unions and what have you. So he probably gets that kind of support. But he also, there's a group called Peace Action of Michigan, and they rate how the different candidates and different representatives and senators vote. He got a 34% rating from Peace Action of Michigan, the same as Republicans. So in other words, 66% of the time he voted with, you know, for war, for, you know, and all this. So people are concerned. We don't want John Boehner to, you know, to become the Speaker of the House, and, you know, everything will go down the drain. And so there's two things. Why do we keep rewarding people like that who do not have a progressive agenda, who don't, who call themselves liberals only through a grave misunderstanding of the term, who have nothing to offer people other than the fact that they're not Republicans? Or is that enough? I mean, do we really want these people that screwed up everything and got us into wars back in power again? So that's the blackmail.
It's very frustrating.
Yeah, that's the blackmail. And my district and Jalene's district is representative by Sandra Levin. And old Sandy, just don't even start me on this guy. And I swore to myself that I was going to vote for the Green Party candidate and to encourage these people.
Have you changed your mind?
Well, I don't even know. Definitely going to vote for Margaret Gutshall on the Green Party ticket for Wayne State University Board of Governors.
Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah. She's an old friend. She was injured grievously in an auto accident several years ago, and now she's a spokesperson for people with disabilities. Wonderful person.
Great.
Yeah, so we'll vote for her.
We'll vote for her.
But so do we? Should we just let it maybe everything go to hell? I mean, maybe just give it over to the nutbags on the right?
No, Peter!
I mean, in Montana, the Republicans, their state program, their state official platform is that homosexual activity should be made illegal.
Can you believe this?
What year is this?
And there was another state that did it as well, I think.
Yeah. But don't these people say something about get the government off our back?
Yeah, so get your government out of people's
bedroom.
Yeah, parts.
Yeah.
Leave their bits and pieces alone.
But for
your business.
For you Dems that are always perennial worried that the evil Republicans are going to get in, and they do great damage, I got to admit that, things aren't actually that bad. More people disapprove of the Republicans than the Democrats. Although 66% of the people disapprove of the Democrats, 73% of the people disapprove of the Republicans. The party favorability. 42% favorable for the Democrats, 35% for the Republicans. They said, do you think of your vote for Congress this fall as a vote to help the Republicans, put Republicans in control of Congress, or a vote to help keep the Democrats? 27% want to vote to keep the Democrats in control, only 23% to keep the Republicans. And on like this. Who do you think has a better idea for solving the nation's problems? 40% said the Democrats, 33% the Republicans. So this is, you know, all the pundits saying, you know, the Democrats are going to get pasted. Regardless of how you usually vote, do you think the Republican Party or the Democratic Party will do more to help the middle class? Only 33% people, the respondents thought the Republicans would. 55% thought the Democrats.
That's pretty good.
Also say the Democrats would be 44% more likely to create new jobs, only 38% of the Republicans. And I don't know, I think they get one thing. Oh, yeah. Who would help small businesses more? Now, 49% Democrats, 41% Republicans. So why in the world does anybody think that the Republicans are going to pull it out?
Here we go. Once again, the media.
Yeah, the media. And the fact that I think that great numbers of Democrats will just stay home.
Well, I'd like to hear from you. People.
Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan, although, wait a minute, we hire somebody to tell you all that.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jolene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? Or are you stuck in a tax payment plan that's getting you nowhere? The IRS is now taking very aggressive actions, such as bank levies and wage garnishments. If you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debts for less than you owe, remove penalties and interest, and protect you from bank levies and garnishments. As a hardworking American, you do have rights. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Line scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove line scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101, The Riff.
Water is all around us. No wonder it's hard to imagine we're facing a water crisis. But we are. So that's why the American Planning Association brings you simple ways to save water, at home and in your community. Learn more at planning.org. That's planning.org. A public service message from this station and the American Planning Association.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. Yeah, stuck all right. Now watch. If you take your palm like this and smack it on the bottom right here, you can get it open pretty easily. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To find out how you can adopt, please visit our website at AdoptUSKids.org or call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Wow.
I feel so left out.
And Jolene Jordan, 313-298-WRIF. Jade, are you listening still? She loads those.
She's in bed by now.
She is. That's good. Yeah. When is she going to get home?
Yeah, right. She lives a far away.
Yeah.
Jade.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Stephanie. You know, Stephanie can communicate with us through the room where she gets the calls at 313-298-WRIF. And I don't know. I always see her notes later. And she writes that Gary Peters replaced Nolenberg. So
thank you,
Stephanie. It did start with a K. You're spelling it with an N. So I was right. It was a K.
Wow, what a bizarre thing. K.
One of the things we were talking about is ordinary working people, middle-class people, out of desperation voting for the Republicans. And in the Detroit, or in the Sunday Free Press today, If you're listening from far away, we don't say free press the way you would normally say it. It's the free press.
Yes.
Yeah.
Every town has their own way of pronouncing things, right?
Yes. And so here, according to Dawson Bell, a Free Press staff writer, Michigan voters, especially those in Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb counties, are suffering serious economic distress in the form of lost pay, jobs, and housing value. And now they're leaning towards Republican Rick Snyder in the face in the race for governor rather than Democrat Virge Bonaro with his message as an economic populist. Well, you don't want an economic populist, do you?
The Verge has gained.
Yeah, he has.
Slowly.
But in this poll, those who said their income, household income had declined over the last year supported Snyder by nearly 3-1, 60% to 22%. And they represented 41% of 600 likely voters questioned in the poll. So, again, this is what I'm saying.
It's a bad idea. If you are a Democrat and you're on the left and you're thinking about voting for Rick Snyder, I say just don't go there.
But this is desperation. And I was wondering.
And I'm desperately saying, please don't go there.
You know, the Carpenters Union has endorsed Rick Snyder, who's never held public office.
Correct.
And he's, what is it? Okay, the only thing I remember about him from his ads, he called himself the nerd.
Oh, great. Okay, I mean, I love nerds. I really love nerds. But
again, this is desperation. People feel that things went bad under Governor Granholm, although it's really hard to get out of people exactly what, not even so much what she did wrong, about what she could have done differently.
One really has an answer, do they, Peter?
No, because you think it has anything to do with the auto industry or something like that?
Maybe just the state of Michigan?
You go. Anyway, so they go, well, looks like the Democrats didn't do so well. Let's get the Republicans in. I mean, we got to do better than that, folks. So let's see. Stephanie writes in our little chat here, someone wants to know if you are going to the John Stewart, Stephen Colbert rally.
Oh,
you know about that, right?
Oh, gosh, I do.
Yeah, the Daily Show host John Stewart is hosting a million moderate march in Washington. But fake political nemesis Stephen Colbert will be nearby to keep fear alive against those, quote, dark optimistic forces.
He's so funny.
He is. Colbert and his arch enemy on the network plan to hold opposing political rallies in the National Mall just before the November elections. Does it have? Oh, yeah.
October 30th.
Yeah. Stewart interrupted his regular fake newscast Thursday night to announce a rally to restore sanity. He said it's for people too busy with their normal life to go to other political rallies.
It's for people who think shouting is annoying.
Well, I don't know if he's, they want it to some extent, sort of damn both houses. But I have to say, both about the teabaggers and more exclusively on the left, is that people shout. Remember when I always characterize rallies and how when you...
Yeah, all you hear is the...
Yeah.
You can tell you've been to a lot of these because you've got that down pat.
And that's all you hear on the media. Now, if there was any modicum of fairness in the media, which there is not, people would be brought in. I mean, they bring some of these teabaggers in, but they never bring anybody in on the left. Remember, the teabaggers, they can have 600 people at a rally, and they get international news, international coverage. They get more reporters at an event than the baggers that show up. We bring 15,000 people to Detroit. No one's ever heard of it outside of Detroit and many people in Detroit. This was June 21st in Detroit. It was the United States Social Forum, where 15,000 leftists and progressives and liberals got together and tried to think, what the hell can we do to turn this society around and make it work for the vast majority of the people rather than just all the rich?
Well, there's another rally that's happening October 3rd, and this is the kind of counter rally to the teabaggers. And, in fact, there are buses available.
Second.
Oh, they leave on the 2nd, I think.
No, it's October 2nd.
Oh, it is October 2nd.
Saturday, October 2nd.
Okay.
Oh, wait. You remind me of me. Let's focus. Let's stay on the John Stewart.
Well, I learned from you.
Stephen Colbert. Hey, the people that are on the line, we are going to we're going to get you. So
be patient, and yeah, we have a couple lines open. So if you hear something that you want to respond to, give a call.
The reason that people shout, whether it's the teabaggers or more understandably the people on the left who never get any real representation on any news or on these political talk shows on Sunday morning. That's what you're relegated to. I mean, you can represent tens of millions of people with your ideas rather than this little kind of Ross Perot blip that the teabaggers actually represent. Essentially, you know, the far right wing of the Republican Party. So all the nuts and what have you rise suddenly to the fore. But that's why people yell. So I don't like that. I don't like that that John Stewart is saying that. And also he's saying there's extremists on both sides. That on one hand, you know, over half the Republicans think that Barack Obama wants to institute Sharia law.
That's true. They do.
So this is totally wacky. I mean, this is so far out of line with reality that it's just stunning. On the other hand, he cites, you know, people that called Bush a war criminal. Mm-hmm. Well, there's not too many people that call Bush a war criminal. Jalene and I do.
We kicked off a couple stations.
Yeah,
we did.
But we're, you know, I don't think we're very representative of anything.
Of the mainstream in any way.
Yeah. So Stewart's going to have this rally on October 30th. Colbert also announced a march to keep fear alive, to restore truthiness to the nation on his show. For those of you who don't know, truthiness was a 2006 word of the year that meant truth that comes from the gut, not books.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Colbert is encouraging all freedom-loving patriots to bring an overnight bag and five extra sets of underwear to challenge Stewart's dark, optimistic forces. He said the nation can't afford to rally to restore sanity in the middle of a recession.
Oh, he is something else.
He said the United States is built on three bedrock principles: freedom, liberty, and fear. They want to replace our fear with reason, he wrote, but never forget, reason is just one letter away from treason.
He is great.
I love this guy.
Yeah.
All right, the real march is going to happen, as Jalene almost
said.
Saturday, October 2nd, in the nation's capital. One Nation is about reordering our nation's priorities to invest in our most valuable resource, which is our people. Now, I have a link on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, which is almost worthless. I went there today and doesn't say when the events are at. And I tried to email these people and the email bounced. But this is big. National talk show host Ed Schultz has a radio show and a television show on MSNBC.
He does 3 hours of talk, and then he heads over in New York, and then he heads over to MSNBC, where I believe he does a three-hour show there. So 3 hours of TV after that. And then he lives in Minneapolis and flies there home on the weekends. This guy's a maniac in a good way.
So he wants to beat the teabagger rally. And for some reason or other, he keeps repeating the figure that the teabaggers had 300,000 people at their rally that was going to bring the nation back to God. Remember, I opened the mic, Jalene opened the mic, and said, we invite any teabagger, any right-winger, anybody to tell us what bringing the country back to God meant in terms of policy.
We'd still like to know, because we still believe in this thing, this little crazy thing called separation of church and state.
Well, any way you slice it, like, what was the guy's name, Scott Stevenson? Mm-hmm. How would bringing the country back to God get Scott Stevenson a job? I don't get that.
It would not.
How bringing
That's
the country
right.
back to God, which I don't even know what that means. I have no idea what that means. Back to God when? During the Bush administration? Because he used to talk about
Well, God
the
told
Lord.
Him to go to Iraq.
Yeah.
God told me to do it.
Maybe it was the devil. Anyway, there are people putting together buses. If you've never done this, this is
pretty cool thing to do. Yeah.
You get on a bus Friday night, you travel all night on the bus, and you protest all day. And then you get back on a bus. Yeah. So I can send you a form if you would like. If you write me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com, I will. Wait a minute.
You'll respond.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'll send you the form. But there's got to be more, and I'll get more of this on my website.
It's a $70 round trip for one of those that I read in your email.
Yeah.
It's pretty reasonable. Bring your little lunch.
So they want to get a lot of people there. The teabaggers, did not have 300,000 people there, and I don't know why Ed Schultz.
It was like 80.
Yeah, that's what they did, these aerial views. And you could see from the photos of the 1963 Martin Luther King March, they didn't even fill half as much space, but right. Whatever.
Ed's going to get a whole lot more.
All right. Some of you people have been waiting a long time. Thank you. There's more lines that you can fill up. 313-298.
Wow, we're finally going to take some calls, Peter?
No. Oh, yeah. I'm only kidding. All right. Here is Todd. Todd's in Madison Heights. Hi, Todd. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Julian.
Hi.
I got a good question. What are your feelings on the Barack Obama's medication bill?
Well, it doesn't do much, but hopefully it's a start towards socialized medicine that we should have. What do you
mean? I'm a disabled Detroiter.
Yeah.
I've got diseases that aren't even nobody's put any money into a cure.
Oh no.
And I want, know if, this is really going to help, because there's a lot of people with the diseases I have that don't get good medical attention versus cancer, not cancer or any of the other diseases.
Well, as you know, I mean, with this recession that's taken this incredible human toll, and you could be part of it. Also, when you have this extraordinarily wealthy nation, which it's shared so badly, majority of it goes to the very rich people. The rest of it goes to wars and preparations for wars that don't have to be prepared for, and wars that don't have to be fought. There's not a lot of money left over to deal with the needs of the average citizen. So, I mean, all the money now that's going in taxes, rather than going out the door to war spending and war fighting and the tax breaks for the rich, could go to both medical care and medical research. But no one, there's not a single Democrat that'll say, because they're afraid of criticizing Barack Obama, will say, listen, we ought to think about, for openers, cutting the war budget in half and taking that money to pay down the deficit, because there's nobody to fight. And if there is issues that look like they're arising with China or Russia, who are trying to encircle with bases in Iraq and Afghanistan and what have you, why don't we just try to say, hey, why can't we be friends?
Maybe in the end help someone like you fight these diseases.
Absolutely. But there's got to be some social priorities. And right now, it's preparation for war, because that's what drives the economy. And there's nothing, results in this spending, but it doesn't work very well. I mean, it worked to get us out of the 1930s depression. Of course, created an enormous deficit as well then, but that was paid down. And then the feeling was that we had to keep on a permanent footing. So we kept inventing enemies, the Soviet Union, which never really posed any military threat. Now we're off fighting terrorists, a guy in a cave who's on kidney dialysis, and we need $1 trillion a year. Doesn't make a lot of sense. All right, Todd, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Here's Frank in South Lyon. Hey, Frank, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Jolene.
Hi.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to make some criticisms. Don't take it too hard, because I've listened to the show for, I guess it's probably been nearly 30 years. And
well, hey, we have a complaint department, but I'm sorry, the complaint department is closed. No, go ahead. I'm only kidding. No. I'm only kidding. Go ahead.
Well, all right. I can say my criticism.
Sure, sure. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, a long time ago, we would talk about current events. We'd talk about local news. We'd talk about something that possibly the nation would be aware of. But lately, I guess for some time, it's really turned into a political show. Every Sunday, we're always talking politics. I've talked to you several times, going back to should marijuana be legalized, issues even 20 years ago.
We got our drug segment coming up.
Okay.
Yeah, we usually fit that in.
Okay. But it seemed as though there was many issues. You would start the show out by bringing up, say, four or five different topics, and then people would usually comment on those, but they could say anything they'd want to. But lately, for years, I guess, it's really been about the economy, the president, libs, Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, and so on.
Well, let me just stop.
Can I say I've worked on this show since 1998, and it's the same show.
Well,
in my opinion, I mean, I'm sure it's changed in
40 years. You know, like beauty is in the eye
true.
Of the beholder.
Yeah.
Here's the deal, Frank. I mean, to some extent, there was a time in which we could talk about, and I remember, you know, years ago, if you've been listening that long, when we were talking about was there backward masking in Led Zeppelin LPs?
We still talk about that once.
We can still talk about it. Right now, we are at a critical turning point in perhaps the planet's very being. And so this commands our attention. And one thing is that anyone at any time is welcome to bring up any single subject that they want. I know we have the bully pulpit here, and we set the tenor. And so that probably it gives it the character. But, Frank, I want you to bring up anything.
Anything.
Okay. I just wanted to note the change in the show that, you know, your topics, what you would bring up, were they stimulated the topics of the evening. And for years and years, and Jolene, I know that you've come on in the last several years. You were producer of the show, and then you came on to the radio. And Peter, at that time, seemed to be somewhat nervous for some time following. Peter, I don't know if you agree.
I knew he was going to bring it back to me, Peter.
If you
were. he did. He seemed to be like very cautious about what he said, and he stumbled on his words. And he's got it together now, though. I mean, he's back to the same.
Peter, I'm glad you got it together. You were really unnerving me. You were losing
you
it.
Were. You
no,
were.
He
you
wasn't.
He was driving me crazy.
What is he saying? You were unnerving me?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you sat across from her, you could be a little unnerved as well.
I don't know if I've seen her, so I don't know.
Go to our website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.
It's a terrible picture of me. Don't base it on that. We'll get a new picture.
Okay, get a new picture.
Yeah.
But I have talked to Peter, and he unnerves me sometimes whenever I speak to him. He always shuts me down. He's far more knowledgeable about the issues than I am, so I can never really quite battle him, but
why must you feel you must battle? Why can't we all just converse?
Well, because Peter has all the. He seems to have. He's very good at debating, I guess.
I've never done honest work.
He's been doing it for 40 years.
I've been taking notes to try to.
Oh, I love it. See, you know, if Peter sucked at this point and was a poor debater, then he should have been fired a long time ago.
I'll tell you one thing.
There's a reason he's still around.
And I think I mentioned this last week, and that is that on a professional, let me put it another way, a big-time, this is professional, we're getting paid, on a big-time talk show, when it says, like the caller before you, Todd, wanted to talk about health care, that one of the many producers of the show,
because they have at least five,
would get all this information, and there would be several screens here, and have it up. But, and I was thinking about this tonight. I operate the control board here.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly talk show hosts don't do that. I mean, so what I have to do is I have to see what's coming up. I have to shuffle around for these stories. I have to keep my eye on the clock to make sure that we're going to go to commercials or whatever in just a little bit in any event. And about six other things.
Now, why was
aren't
it
I good? Aren't I cool?
You are cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Why must it be about my looks that you're unnerved? It should be about this sheer brain power that you have to talk with every Sunday night.
You know what? I got to tell you. There could be a feminist revolution.
Yeah.
And all that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's something in the genetic makeup.
Yeah.
You know why? Yeah, that's what I think. You know, women are always complaining that the men in their life are looking at other women.
Oh, okay.
Why do they do
really?
That? Yeah.
Because they just look.
Why do they look?
We all look. We look at each other. We have eyes.
Well, I think it is.
The majority of us.
There's a drive to reproduce.
Oh, sure.
So there's sexual attraction.
Sure. Yeah. Like there is. God, Lord knows you and I didn't want to reproduce.
Frank, what?
Well, not together. Individually, when I used to be married, you know. Peter, can you imagine little Julines and little Werbies running around the world?
Yeah. Not us. I mean, our children.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks,
not
Frank.
Together.
I appreciate
again.
It. All right. Hey, I want to talk about... Frank, you don't want to talk about politics? How about this?
Frank,
we'll talk about drugs.
Up. Whatever. Okay,
we'll
here
talk
we go.
About diet pills.
We're going to go back to Frank's favorite subject.
We'll talk about... pornography.
Hey, pornography
that?
In the Pentagon. What
All
is
right.
that?
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
Do people sometimes describe you as a saver, a bit frugal, penny-wise, and somewhat thrifty?
You know, cheap.
If that sounds like you, you're going to love the newest addition to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Coupon crazy!
At MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, you'll still find great gift certificates for local businesses with goods and services on sale for more than half off. Find money-saving online coupons that you can download right now and start saving immediately. Log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and save big.
With online coupons from Autolab USA, with over 20 locations in the Metro Detroit area and a 12,000-mile, 12-month warranty. Hagopian Rug Care Center, with 5 locations in Metro Detroit. They're the leader in carpet, rug, furniture, and tile cleaning.
If you're looking for ways to enjoy life and stay within your budget, then go
coupon crazy
now at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. That's MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online home for great ways to save big at local Michigan businesses.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werbe.
All right, is Jade mad at you? Our pal Jade is loading the wrong, what are you doing? Oh, yeah.
First, I'm starting to get a complex tonight.
I didn't have your mic on.
This guy says I unnerve you. You don't turn my mic on. Jade leaves my name off.
Yeah,
I don't care.
That's
Let's just keep doing talk radio.
That's what's called old production. All right. We were talking earlier about Representative Gary Peters. What is he from? The 9th District? The 12th District? I think I can't even remember my district. I think Senator Levin is from the 9th and Peters from the 12th.
Because I'm originally not from here, I don't have all those numbers
right.
in my
and
mind.
So I was saying, you know, we get blackmailed into voting for a guy like Gary Peters who wants to continue tax breaks for the ultra-wealthy and also votes really badly on issues of war and peace. And Dean writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Nolenberg had this district for years, maybe decades before Gary Peters. He was a crusty old goat. And
that's
he
good
says,
way to describe
I'm
him.
In an animal rights group, and Peters has 100% record of voting for the animals, according to the woman who runs the animal rights group. Southeast Michigan animal rights team.
Yeah. We're animal lovers.
I mean, listen, most of these Democrats, including Sander Levin, vote right on a or vote correctly
on a lot of things. Yeah.
But they barely qualify as centrists. Certainly not liberals. Certainly not progressives. All right. I said we were going to talk about drugs and.
We will.
But we've got some callers. Let's get them.
Let the people speak, Peter.
And Stephanie, I cannot see what the caller on line 2 or line 4 want to talk about. So if, I think that sometimes
mystery,
just our little machine
mystery,
here. Yeah. Here's Sam in Detroit. Hi, Sam. It's Peter and Jalene. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Peter. Hi, Jalene.
Hi, Sam.
Hey, Peter. Isn't it amazing after 200 or so years of America devouring all the resources and the economies of different countries all around the world, now America is eating itself.
Wow. That's an interesting way to look
it
at
is.
It.
It is.
Yeah. Well, we don't produce anything anymore. We just make money off of money.
We produce debt.
Yeah.
We're making a living off of debt. These bankers, these insurance companies, the medical industry, the energy companies, they're all finding ways to squeeze every last drop of blood out of an American citizen. They don't want to give us jobs, but they sure will give us credit. And now they don't even want to give us that. I mean, they're just bleeding us dry. And another thing I'd like to say is that some of the Democrats destroyed the economy and put us in two wars over the last few years. Wouldn't you be seeing Republican commercials flying all over the place every 10 minutes saying, these guys destroyed the economy, these guys, now they want their jobs back. Why would you do it? They'd be having bombs going, nuclear bombs going off in the background, everything.
Sure.
Why the Democrats won't go to extremes trying to get out of here and get these voters out?
I don't know. There's going to be a big effort, but I think it's going to be tough. Sam, let me run this by you because this goes right to what you were talking about, jobs. There was an article in something called 24/7 Wall Street, and they're talking about the American industries that will never recover. Now, get this list. Here are the jobs they say are never coming back. State and local government jobs, construction, installation, maintenance, and repair, automotive manufacturing, pharmaceuticals, big telecom, newspapers, airlines, realtors, and bank tellers. Well, what do we got? Fast food. I mean, this is really frightening if this is the case. Because remember,
because no one wants to take a stand against the elite, against those with the money, and do something about these trade deals. If we had fair trade, we'd be able to employ our citizens again and create a tax base to bring back these jobs.
Sure.
You're making a lot of sense tonight, Sam.
And what that would mean would be the Democrats would have to come out for repeal of NAFTA and all the rest of these trade agreements that have done the American middle class so much harm. Thank you, Sam. I appreciate you calling. 313-298-WRIF. Now everybody wants to talk about Frank. Frank called in before.
Before the
break.
Did I not just say that's what happens? A lot of times what happens, the flow of the show depends on maybe one phone call, and then boom, it's over. Let's take it.
I want to talk about drugs.
Peter, we have an hour left. We can fit it in.
Okay. Here is, it's Scott, who's calling from Canada. Thanks for making our show international. Where are you calling from in Canada, Scott?
In Chatham.
Chatham, eh? Okay. Go ahead. You're on the air.
I'm Winter. No, I listened to the show there a little while ago, and I told Jolene I'd meet my future girlfriend in the smoking lounge. Whether she remembers or not.
No, I remember that. I said that when people were complaining about the smoking being banned in bars and restaurants, I said, listen, look at it as a way to meet people. It's very bonding out in the smoking area.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like smokers. Like I would, that would be what do they call that? A deal
deterrent?
Breaker.
Deal breaker, yeah.
If a woman smoked. But if you're a smoker and everybody met outside, you go, hey, we got a lot in common.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, Frank called in about going on about you guys don't have nothing going on your show other than this
politics. Yeah.
Well, you guys had a whole show on the smoking ban that happened in Chatham. In the U.S.
In the U.S.
We had a whole show about it. I listen every weekend.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
And the thing is that he sits there and says, you guys don't talk about nothing else. Well, you know what? I was disappointed in the fact that you had a whole show on the smoking ban on Michigan.
Oh, you would rather talk about the politics.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Well, this here's the thing that need to let Frank know.
I've lived with this for over 2 or 3 years here in Canada.
The smoking ban.
Bylaw.
Yeah.
The smoking ban. Well, man, you had all Jolene had to deal with all that night was people talking about the smoking ban.
Right. I was alone that night.
Well, let me ask you this, Scott. Has the smoking ban actually made you cut down on your overall consumption of cigarettes?
No.
No. Wow.
Interesting.
No, it hasn't.
You're going outside a lot.
I stay home. I stay home and drink beer and smoke my cigarettes.
Hey, rock it out.
Hopefully listening to WRIF when we're playing the music.
Hey,
thank you, Scott. I appreciate your call.
Oh, I just had a thought about Frank. Oh, well, I lost it. Bye.
Well, here's somebody else who wants. Drew in Rochester wants to talk about Frank as well. Go ahead. You're on the air, Drew.
Dude, Adams is 83, man. Your show's still totally changed. You used to do like an entertainment and politics show. Stephen Davis who wrote Hammer and the Gods at your show one time. You had Jackson Brown.
Oh, yeah.
And then you had the guy who wrote about Saturday Live, the original Saturday Live on your show. He used to talk about the incinerator. He used to do all about Detroit stuff.
Yeah. Well, we don't do. That's one thing is true. We don't do as much Detroit stuff.
We've been talking about the incinerator within the last 3 months.
Yeah,
the Detroit incinerator,
environmental and financial disaster that, people always have such a, white suburbanites have such a bad rap on Coleman Young, and they never really get to the nub of some of his real errors, and that because most of their stuff is just stupid racism. But one of the key policy decisions that he made that really hurt the city and hurt the environment was that huge incinerator.
And I have to say,
thanks for listening for so long, Drew. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
My thought came back to me. It didn't take long. It is a political talk show. What do we say at the beginning of it, Peter?
What do we say at the beginning of every show?
This is the Detroit's longest-running political call-in talk show. Don't we say political?
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
It's a political show.
All right. Nick, Larry, the rest of you, hold on. I just want to make a few comments because I promised Frank we were going to talk about some other stuff. Here. A federal advisory committee Thursday voted against recommending approval of a new weight loss drug developed by Arena Pharmaceuticals. In their 9-5 vote, the advisors said there were some uncertainties about the safety of the drug called lorcaserin, particularly findings of tumors in rats. Well, I hate when that happens.
Let's not let the tumors stop us or anything.
It was not clearly unsafe, but even the possibility, blah, 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 blah. Now, there's another one, too. Corn syrup producers want a sweeter name. You know, they used to be called high fructose corn syrup. Everything you look in, it's got it.
I have something. I'm drinking something in front of me that starts with that, I believe.
No doubt. Must be water.
Yeah, bad stuff.
The average American ate 35.7 pounds of high fructose corn syrup last year. Now, I got to tell you, if I've eaten a pound and a half, that's amazing. So that means that someone ate about 70 pounds.
There was something on earlier when we walked in the studio, and this young gal in her early 20s drinks 30 Coca-Colas a day, and she, in 10 days, drank 25 pounds of sugar.
Well, here is the deal. I mean, what's the name of this group? The Corn Refiners Association. They want permission to use that new name. They want to call it corn sugar, and they hope that the new name will ease confusion about the sweetener, which is used in soft drinks, bread, cereal, and other products.
Now that the high fructose corn syrup has been busted, meaning that people get that it's bad, they need to change it and try to fool people because people are uninformed. Ugh.
There's a 20-year low on consumer concerns.
In consumption. Because of all of this.
And concerns that it is more harmful or more likely to cause obesity than ordinary sugar. Perceptions for which there's little scientific evidence. Which is right. It's sucrose. Just all sucrose. So it is the same. But renaming products has succeeded before. For example, uric acid rapeseed oil became much more popular after becoming canola oil, which is actually good stuff.
I was
going to
say,
Canada oil. Well, no, I was just thinking of something else that they. Oh yeah, Seabass was some. It had some horrible
what
name.
What was it?
It was some. Listen, someone out there knows everything. So you can write us at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Prunes tried to shed a stodgy image by becoming dried plums. But wait a minute. Let me see. This is page two. Oh, yeah. The average American ate 35.7 pounds of high fructose corn syrup. But let's go back to this diet pill. The deal is, I mean, there's hardly an American alive that doesn't want to lose weight. I mean, even to the point where young women who are clearly thin are still consumed with them.
Yeah.
I mean, I always want to lose 7 pounds.
Yeah, you know? Right around there.
Yeah.
Sure. Right.
Yeah, and some, of course, we have a high degree of obesity in the country.
Especially in children right now.
In Michigan and all of that.
Yep.
So it is not about pills. I mean, one of the things that Americans and I mean, I'd have to, I can't begin to tell you how much candy that, you know, that was the problem. Jade, who we were talking about earlier, who's on the air before us, who puts in these production items that identifies
intros
the show
and
put in the wrong ones, these old, out-of-date ones that doesn't mention Jolene.
Yeah.
We're all chomping down on these candies, right? And I'm thinking, why am I eating these, you know?
You had three of them, by the way.
Yeah, and they were big.
Full disclosure.
Yeah, they were big. So really what weight is all about, I mean, is this a real revelation? It's calories in, calories out.
That's right.
You know, if we all lived in Bangladesh, the heaviest among us would not be heavy. So it's a matter. But listen, we always put it out like it's this individual failing. And it's sort of like alcoholism. I mean, it's all, you know, why don't you have the fortitude or the
to not drink.
Right. I know a lot of people or most people now even say that alcoholism is a disease.
Yeah.
But when something has tens of millions of people exhibiting the same behavior, it's not the individual slot within a larger social context. And the fact that we, there are so many things, the way stuff is advertised. I mean, there's so little gratification in so many people's lives that the oral gratification means a lot. It's the availability of it and on and on and on and on mm-hmm. like that. So it ain't about a pill. It's about how many calories do we take in and how many calories do we put out.
And trying to balance your nutrients.
Right. Okay. Let's get a couple more calls. You can join us at 313-298-WRIF, and then we'll talk about drugs. The war on drugs. War on drugs? I can't even drive on drugs. Yeah, all right. Here's Larry in Michigan Township. Hi, Larry. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter. I've got a question about how we had the bailouts for the auto industry. I know it ain't about drugs, but...
No, that's okay.
That's the thing. You can talk about anything you want at any time on this show.
Thank you, Jillian.
Within reason.
Okay. It's kind of like a two-pointer. I was kind of wondering mostly about how, like, GM, when they got their bailout money, which they supposedly needed, how quickly they turned around and paid that loan off. I mean, like, they're talking about how they were in such dire need of all this money. We can't run a business unless we have this money. And a lot of it had to deal with taking more away from the union concessions, I think, mostly is what they were really basing everything upon.
Yeah, well, they also got rid of, they shed some of the models, right? I forgot what those are already. What's that car that was made in Tennessee?
The Saturn.
The Saturn, and they're getting rid of the Oldsmobile. They got rid of the Oldsmobile,
mm-hmm.
and
right.
they got rid of tons of property. They have something called, general properties or something like that, that's got to get rid of all this stuff. So what, you know, they really just shrunk it all back, and all these union concessions as well.
Right, but I mean, do you honestly think that they sold it with all them, with doing all that and all the cars that they may have sold? Do you really think that they were able to turn around in, like, what, a year and a half or so and pay off them loans? Because, I mean, it seems to me like they actually just kind of, like, banked the money and took the loans so that they could get the concessions off the unions and then come back and try to, you know, win the hearts and souls of the American people by saying, okay, hey, we got enough money now. We made our money back. We could pay off the loans.
A long-term
buying our products again.
A long-term strategy. Well, you know, would you put anything past those guys? No. And whatever happened to this public offering of the stock that they were, you know, going to buy out the government and all that? I don't. Maybe some more thought on that. Appreciate your comments, so Larry. Thanks for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. All right. So drug arrests. Top $1.6 million last year, despite a small drop. There was a small drop. So 1,600,000 people who simply wanted to alter their consciousness, to go up, go down, be expansive, whatever.
All around.
I never understood the rationale. I mean, what's happened, of course, is like any prohibition. It seemed like the worst thing about alcohol in the 1920s was how it attracted the gangs and the mobsters, mm-hmm. and the mafia and what have you. But, of course, they were only there because it was prohibited and they could make lots of money off of something. So people will argue, oh, if you do a lot of cocaine or heroin or stuff like that, or some people even think marijuana, then that means you're harming yourself. Well, even if you would admit that that's so, and excess in anything, it's harmful, mm-hmm. why wouldn't you, for instance, have the police governing how much, food people consumed, right? Or how much greasy food.
Things that are bad for you.
Yeah, that we really know are bad. I mean, marijuana does not appear to be harmful to anyone.
Right.
Yet, are you ready for this? There was 1,663,582 drug arrests last year.
Mm-hmm.
858,000 of them were for marijuana offenses. And marijuana arrests have accounted for over half of all drug arrests, making 2009 the first year pot bust accounted for more than half of all drug arrests.
And with all these medical marijuana laws and things, you know, California talking about legalizing, you'd think that would be going in the opposite direction. Yeah,
this is, by the way, stopthedrugwar.org. Talk about failures of wars and absolute waste of money. Of course, though, again, this is this massive transfer of wealth from you and me. We earn money. The government takes taxes, and they put it into enforcement and imprisonment, which is the
prison. There's a lot of things I'd like to be enforced, and there certain people should be in prison for certain things, but pot ain't one of them.
Right. But it creates clients, as I always say, for the prison industrial complex.
They've got to fill those suckers.
The more than 1.6 million people arrested on drug charges last year were nearly three times the number arrested for violent offenses.
My gosh, exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah. So three times as many people were arrested for drugs as were for attacking you someone in your family.
They're harming themselves rather than, perhaps in the process. Some dealers, I guess, don't touch their stuff, you know. But, people who are killing and raping and stalking and doing all these kinds of things, you know.
How about this?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
More people were arrested on drug charges than any other single offense. Absolutely.
Wow.
Including drunk driving.
Amazing.
Including larceny.
You know how I am about the drunk driving thing. You pull them over. Throw away the keys. I don't want you driving on my roads. I'd like to live tonight. Thank you.
And now Representative Rick Jones of Republican, naturally of Grand Lodge. He's a former Michigan sheriff, and he's going to introduce a bill, or he has introduced a bill into the Michigan legislature. Hey, there, see, we're talking about Michigan.
We're keeping it local.
Would allow roadside drug testing of suspect drivers. Now, how in the world, I mean, someone could really smell of pot.
If they're Cheech and Chong in it, you know.
Yeah, but don't you think this is really, really open to arbitrary and capricious, testing?
Absolutely. Yeah. Sounds a little like Arizona.
Legalize it, man.
Peter Walt wrote in and said Chilean, sea bass was originally called Patagonian toothfish.
Yeah. And you know what?
Enjoy. And he said, you're welcome, Walt.
Stephanie wrote us the same thing in our little chat here.
Oh.
Now, Stephanie, do you know these things? She's in the other room, but
she's over there Googling. Otherwise, she's
Google
really, really, really knows a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, she says Google.
Which is possible. Right. She's a smart cookie.
Yeah. But I forgot that. I did that. It was the Patagonian toothfish. But sea bass is wonderful.
Yeah.
You don't like sea bass?
I don't like fish.
And they put the whole fish Head and all.
Eyeballs?
Eyeballs, yeah. Some people eat the eyeballs.
Oh, God, Peter.
You suck them out with a pop.
Oh, that is disgusting. Please don't do this to me.
That's actually a line from a William Burroughs novel, but I won't even go there. It's much worse.
Hey, also a quick email from David. And he says, thank you for your program, Peter. Also love Joe's comment. I like that that's become my nickname. I also love Joe's comment. Also, too, LOL. Your show is the best. I think even better than, well, someone that, one of our colleagues, I won't mention it, that's saying something in my view. Keep it up, all.
Why can't we say?
Well, we used to work with him. Should we say?
Tom?
No. Mike.
Mike Malloy.
Okay, you said it.
Yeah, Google Mike Malloy.
Workers of the world, unite. David.
Yeah.
Oh, he's in Washington. Hey, cool.
Washington State?
Yes.
Wow. You know what we say here in Detroit? That used to be the left slogan of the 19th century, which is a good idea and a good slogan. Workers of the world, unite. We say, workers of the world,
relax.
We're working too hard if we're working.
Yeah,
here is Nick. Nick is in Rochester Hills. Hi, Nick. It's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for calling us. You're on the air.
Yeah, about the state of the Democratic Party, and I'm a total anarcho-communist, keep in mind. I still think the Democratic Party is worth supporting because there are many Democrats, even in the Senate, who vote the right way most of the time. And usually when they vote the wrong way, it's because their so-called moderate or independent voters have been conned by the right-wing media machine, so they have to pander to all these brainwashed idiots in order to get reelected. And just imagine how much more we could have got out of the Democratic Party in the past years had the Republicans not been complete obstructionists.
Well, that's true. You know, though, if the half-term governor and, what was the guy? I always forget his name. The guy who was running for president against Obama. McCain. Thank you. How soon we forget. And the half-term governor.
His daughter's more popular than him now.
Yeah, and, you know, the quitter. If they would have gotten in, Nick, there probably would have been mass movements of millions of people in the streets.
Right? Way bigger than the baggers, man.
Yeah, people give Obama too much of a free ride on more of this. Or, put it this way, if not in opposition, I mean, should have been in opposition to this Afghan war, there would have been a, you know, support, like, for instance, you know, for medical care. But listen, I got to tell you, you look up, if you haven't already, or I'm sorry if this sounds presumptuous, you look up anarcho-communist, and anarcho-communist means that you, no government and, you know, a complete sharing of all the wealth. Not like a.
I don't think he means it literally. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I thought he did. But no anarcho-communist. You'll have to turn in your black and red card if you vote.
I think you're reading more. Are you there?
Yeah.
I think you mean you're very left.
I know. I really do. I understand the anarcho-communist philosophy, and I totally believe it. But I just understand being realistic. It's not going to happen overnight, and there needs to be a progression to get there. And I do think the Democrats have some good people in their party who can get us there at some point down the line.
They do. Dennis Kucinich and
One more. Maybe not.
There are a number of them.
No, there are. I mean, when you talk about, if you put all of the out there, Peter?
Yeah.
All of the issues, right.
They're much better.
He's correct.
I mean, you can at least say the Democrats are better than a stick in the eye.
They really are.
And the Republicans are a stick in the eye.
Or suck the eyeball out, either way.
With a pop. Yeah. All right. So we're going to talk about pornography. This is the worst kind, but this ties in a lot of ways, to the story about calories and all that.
Okay.
In a reversal, the Pentagon says it will reopen hundreds of cases of alleged purchases of child pornography by Department of Defense employees that Pentagon officials previously declined to investigate.
Ruh-roh.
Earlier this month, they said that in 2007, investigators for the Defense Criminal Investigation Service obtained a list of 264 military service members, civilian employees, and contractors for the Department of Defense who had used credit cards or PayPal to purchase access to a child pornography website.
Now, did they do this at work?
Well, I don't know. Somewhere.
Okay, because how do they find out? You know, we know that radio's famous for male DJs looking up porn, okay? I'm not saying it this company.
Why are you looking at me?
Because I'm talking to you.
I never have.
Do you guilt?
I never have. Not,
no.
Not here. Because there is a footprint.
I mean, there is a footprint. And I want to tell you what, there have been some serious viruses on these computers.
I know.
I mean, not here. Anyway, but not child pornography. What are
these guys,
I'm sure, up to?
Yeah, I mean, of all the things I don't get about sexuality, number one is, well, it's probably a tie between rape and child pornography.
Yes, I mean, stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to watch the Naked News. Remember that?
This is too much of a diversion. We weren't. For one thing, it sounds like we were naked watching the news.
We weren't.
We actually talked.
It's a Canadian thing.
It's a Canadian thing. There was this broadcast called Naked News, and these people would...
These babes
and then guys would just take off
just
all their clothes.
Work as well.
Yeah. And we interviewed remember? One of the anchors. And I said, are you naked now? And she said, yes, I am. And I said, well, Jolene and I are naked as well, because it was radio.
Diversion over.
But guys, you don't, you know, the old thing about you don't have to say everything you think.
Yeah, that's a good one.
In the same way, I mean, things can appeal to you. I mean, in your heart, you know this is not the way to go. Children should be protected.
Absolutely.
And so when...
Now, these are the kind of people I can see in prison.
Well, it is important to control one's urges. To be the master of your urges, not to have your urges be the master of you. And it's just not about, and in this case, it's not just about you. I mean, sometimes with eating, it is just about you. But this, you know, there's real harmful people. But when the hell are these?
I mean, some of these setups that these guys do to get these young people to meet them, it's absolutely, if you have these urges, get help.
Yeah. Think so.
Immediately.
All right, 313-298-WRIF. Here's Mike in Livonia. Mike, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you guys?
We're good.
This isn't really my reason for the call, but as I mentioned to Stephanie, who, by the way, she's great.
Yeah, we agree.
I've been out of town for a number of years. I disagree with your caller about there being too much politics. That was always the reason I tuned in. The last time I spoke to you was around 9/11. But I am curious, this is the first time I've tuned in since, recently got back to Detroit, what was the rationale behind whatever the new change is, the new format is, and having Jolene on board, and then I'd like to get to what I really called about.
I don't know. It just happened.
Well, here's the deal.
She knows.
I've produced this show since 98, and then Peter and I co-hosted just as in this forum that you've now heard for about 3 or 4 years. 3 years that I've been back. Peter put me on the air because we had been on the air together before, and he likes it that way. And when I came back, I came back to Riff. I worked here for a long time, and they put me back on the show, and Peter just said, hey, turn on my mic. That's pretty much how it happened. We didn't really plan it. It just happened.
And we had a nationally syndicated show from 2000 to 2003, and
we're partners in politics.
Yeah. What do I always say? My
Partner in crime thought.
Thought
crime.
My partner in thought crime.
Yeah.
You remember what thought crime is from, right? From 1984. That was a
book.
An offense. Mike, are you with me?
Yes, I didn't know who you were speaking to.
Oh.
Yeah, that actually kind of segues into what I wanted to talk about. But anyways, so far so good. I like the new format. It goes off on a... gives you a bunch of different things to think about rather than used to be like a long segment with one guest. But anyway, getting back to 1984, I was wondering what your thoughts were on just the state of how you go about getting employment these days. Everything is completely anonymous. It's it leaves everything open to just random corporate filters, whether it be your credit. Or perhaps, oh, my God, you know, you smoked some pot 20 years ago. You're just cast out. There is technically laws against discriminating against it, but, of course, you'll never know if, you know, you're in the no pile because of that. I mean, where's the accountability, and what do you think that does to underemployment. I mean, there's so many people out there that, you know, have so much to add that are automatically screened out. I mean, there's just no individuality in this process anymore.
Well,
you don't
get
to talk to anybody.
Yeah, I think there's some laws. I don't know whether it's in other states or in other countries where employers are forbidden to use, like, Facebook stuff, but, you know.
You know they do anyway.
Yeah, they're probably going to do it anyway.
I mean, if you're smart, you have it private, but they say Facebook, no matter what, is not private.
Yeah, you know, I actually, Mike, have no answer for you whatsoever, and I don't even know how I could. I mean, one of the things, there's not enough jobs for everybody. The scramble for them is intense. You know how long that people have been unemployed, and it's only because of what the right-wingers would call socialist programs, that is, extended unemployment benefits, Medicaid being granted to more and more people, which, of course, then means states have to spend less and less money, or more and more money that they don't have. But I have not a clue in terms of how things exist now, how we're going to get out of this. I mean, do you really think that there's any politician of any party, well, certainly not the Republicans, but the Democrats are actually going to do what I do? I mean, tax the rich very heavily. I mean, still leaving them, of course, with millions of dollars. But bring it back to the tax, pardon me, the tax levels of, like, the Eisenhower administration in the 1950s, where there was, you know, huge, the almost confiscatory taxes after a certain amount, or to cut the war budget in half. That's not going to happen, right? So how are we going to solve this? I don't know.
Well, I think it's more a byproduct of just fear peddling and in the increasing amount of information, whether it's cable news or the internet or whatever. You know, you've got every HR lobbying agency convincing even small business owners that if you don't do a thorough background check, you could be liable if, you know, this guy's a psycho.
Hey, Mike, it sounds like you've been bitten by this. Is that true?
No, I haven't been bitten by it, but, you know, any employment process always, you know, starts and ends there, you know. I mean, what did you do 20 years ago when you were in Mexico, you know? At what point do you get to provide for your family and say, hey, you know, I was 18, you know, things were different. As far as I know, it had something to do with a law that was passed that, and at one point, job applications, they could only ask you, have you committed a felony within the last 7 years? Somewhere in the last 15 years, that's all changed. They can ask you, have you ever done anything wrong ever? Have you ever even been charged or pleaded no contest?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what, if innocent until proven guilty, what happened to that?
Yeah, well, now it's guilty till proven innocent. Well, I don't know. We don't do any dating service here, but Stephanie writes, Mike from Livonia, I'm really going to embarrass her, sounds super cool. Tell Mike I say thank you. You guys can hook up later.
Yeah. Keep it in the screening room over there.
All right, hey, Mike, we got to go.
Great.
So we're going to leave it at that, and everybody can be embarrassed, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? Or are you stuck in a tax payment plan that's getting you nowhere? The IRS is now taking very aggressive actions, such as bank levies and wage garnishments. If you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debts for less than you owe, remove penalties and interest, and protect you from bank levies and garnishments. As a hardworking American, you do have rights. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159. If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed, as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Water is all around us. No wonder it's hard to imagine we're facing a water crisis. But we are. So that's why the American Planning Association brings you simple ways to save water at home and in your community. Learn more at planning.org. That's planning.org. A public service message from this station and the American Planning Association.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
That's our little Eat the Rich segment, and Steve writes into call, talk yes at yahoo.com. Hello, girls and guys. Please talk about class warfare. And he quotes Warren Buffett. He says, there's class warfare, all right, but it's my class, the rich class, that's making war, and we're winning. Ha, ha, ha. Eat the rich. Well, indeed, the man is correct. And wow. Are we fighting back? Negatory. All right, let's see. Let's get these kind of in order. Oh, yeah. Ooh, let me just press a magic button here and tell you that at 1 a.m. Eastern time, because people are listening all over the world, my guest is Rachel Maripol. She is a staff attorney for the Center for Constitutional Rights, and you think, But she is the granddaughter of the convicted atomic spies Julius and Ethel Rosenberg.
Oh, well, we've interviewed their son.
Yeah, that's before, right, Robert Maripol.
But now the granddaughter's in it, okay.
And the Maripol father of Robert and, I can't think of the other one's name now, wrote the words to Billie Holiday's Strange Fruit.
Really?
Yeah.
Who did?
The father. The
father of the grandparents.
No.
No, that can't be it. That would be putting us in a whole other era.
When Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, after a judicial farce of a trial, were convicted of passing secrets, atomic secrets to the Soviet Union, and were executed, they were the two children that remained, Robert and, right in my brain, were adopted by a man named Maripol. Mm-hmm. And then they had a couple of daughters, Robert did. One was Rachel, who I'm going to be interviewing. And so it must be so strange. In fact, I don't think she wanted to go into it too deeply because I asked her, I mean, how does one react when you're told that your grandparents were executed?
Yeah. Right.
They knew, by the way, the government knew that absolutely for certain that Ethel Rosenberg was innocent.
Not a spy.
Yeah. And that if Julius, as it turns out, was, that he was an industrial spy, but certainly there was, in a sense, there was no real secret to the atomic bomb. I mean, you needed huge facilities to produce refined uranium, and then you needed a delivery system. I mean, I have a book called Backyard Nukes, like how you can make your own nuclear weapon, but you can't do anything with it substantially. So, for instance, there was...
And you don't have the book so you could learn how to make one.
Yeah.
Set the record straight.
Well, you can go. I know what you're saying. I don't have the book? I have
no,
the book.
I'm saying that you're not reading it so you can make one.
Right. But
you know how people twist things on this show, Peter?
Yeah. So they executed this husband and wife in 1953. And there was a German scientist, a Nazi scientist that wound up in England, who actually was giving atomic secrets, important secrets, to the Soviet Union. And he got 8 years in jail. I mean, that was
unbelievable.
Yeah. So Rachel Maripol. And then, talking about drugs, marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's what Mason Tvert says, who says legalize it, Mon. So that's at 1 a.m. But let's get some more of your calls in, because time is a-flying. And let's see, here is Dominic and Taylor. Hi, Dominic, you're on the air.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Good, hi.
I'm a first-time caller, and Peter's a long-time douchebag. Give me back my filet of fish.
Give me back my filet of fish. Oh, God. He called you a D-bag.
Yeah, that's okay. I don't care. That's an ongoing
terms,
joke.
But not when it comes to you, Peter.
No.
I can think of some D-bags. I could go down a list.
That's stupid. Anyway.
And that was kind of a D-bag comment.
Anyways, I'm going to finish my glass of vinegar. Here is.
Wait, let me whisper a sweet nothing into your ear. Are you ready, Peter?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mouth and kill.
Here is Ed. Ed's in Taylor. Ed, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, Pete. Hi, Jolene.
Hi.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, the way your show used to be when you used to talk about like Noam Chomsky and Captain Paul Watson and Alexander Colburn.
Still do.
Yeah, we still do.
You did, but. In those days, you know, it was like, you know, I think you got a little bit into that. When you got that national groove, you got a little bit into the Democrat-Republican thing more. But the thing is, you used to have a guest, and it was like the first hour, and then after a while, that guest would take questions.
Right.
And then what it would do is it would change the show. You know, like I listen to Jack Lessenberry has a television show in Toledo. And like he'll have these guests, you know, they'll be talking about this or that, and it kind of reminds me of, you know, what you used to do a little bit.
People don't want to talk at 11. They don't want to talk to us at midnight.
Yeah, well, there's trouble finding guests.
For you guys.
Yeah, there's what we got going here are recorded interviews, ones that I did earlier. But, we still talk about those guys.
We've talked about all three of those guys.
Recently. Noam Chomsky. Chomsky. You can Google him.
Noam.
Yeah, Noam. That's a biblical name. And also Alexander Coburn.
Who's ill right now, isn't he?
What?
Who's the one who's ill that we...
I don't know. But Alexander Coburn, you can go to counterpunch.org. Counterpunch.org. Alexander Coburn is spelled C-O-C-K-B-U-R-N, which sounds like something you might, I always say this, right? Get if you were making love on a rug.
Or
but,
just some bad, you know,
never mind. Stop it. All right. And who was the third? Thank you, Ed. Who was the third? Coburn and Chomsky.
No, I already forgot.
Getting late.
You can tell.
313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Here's Chris in White Lake. Hey, Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. What's up?
Nothing. Just the one thing that I just don't realize that people don't get is the false left-right paradigm. These people are all controlled by offshore foreign bankers.
And, you know, we need to get a third party. We need to get something else going because these people are just, they're the same people. I mean, you know, our president is a puppet. He reads everything off a teleprompter. He doesn't.
Well, everybody reads stuff off a teleprompter, Chris. I mean, there's a few people that can say things extemporaneously, but
if you're doing big,
I mean, that's not really a criticism. Or if he does just read it off a teleprompter, who's he a puppet for? I mean, this is a corporate state. This is a corporate state, and mostly what is acted out are corporate imperatives, including war, including the military-industrial complex. And I agree with you that no mainstream politician or party is going to break with that, which includes the Democrats. The Democrats have, at least because they have a base beyond just the wealthy, that they will have social programs and have done that to help the ordinary people. So, I mean, if it was up to the Republicans, there would be no weekend, there would be no Social Security, there would be no right to organize unions, there would be, there would be no Medicare. I mean, every one of these things was opposed by the Republicans. But the Democrats aren't enough, and I agree. I guess I always hope, since the Democrats aren't as, what a recommendation, the Democrats aren't as bad as the Democrats. You can breathe a little easier when the Democrats have political power, although they're usually pretty ineffective as they are now because the Republicans are like a dog on a bone. You know, they're just so united in the Democrats. Anyway, there is a third party. It's called the Green Party. Why don't you vote for them?
Hold on. I voted for Chuck Baldwin, but anyway.
Chuck Baldwin? Isn't he a ball player? Wait a minute. That guy plays second base for the Toronto. Or who is this? Who's Chuck Baldwin?
this is vaguely familiar.
It doesn't matter. But
are you going to do a fillet of fish on me?
Are you going to call him names?
If John McCain would have got elected, which would have been horrible still,
right.
But he wouldn't have had the cover to start wars. Barack Obama has the left cover because everyone believes he's going to stop wars. And everyone's against the Republicans because they're warmongers. So he would have been under the microscope. He wouldn't have been able to expand in Afghanistan and everything that he's doing. He's done nothing he said he would do, just like every other.
Well, wait. We just went through those numbers. Actually, Barack Obama said he was going to end military operations in Iraq. That was one of the promises that he made and one of the promises he carried out. He also said he was going to fight what he saw was the proper war, and that was in Afghanistan. And he kept that promise. It's a promise I do not agree with. Had John McCain and the quitter from, what's that town she's from?
Wasilla,
yeah, the quitter from Wasilla. Had they been in office and started front-loading the Afghan front with tens of thousands of more troops, there would have been millions and millions of people in the street. And I think that the fact that what you're saying, Chris, is that that when you get a Democrat in there, they can pretty much neutralize that kind of criticism, which is really, really bad. And we should have millions of people in the streets. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. And you can do that. You can go to Washington October 2nd. Go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. And, I don't know if I want to take this call. We'll see. Hey, Scott from Wixom, you're on the air.
Hello.
Did you yell at my phone screener?
No. I did earlier. I'm very sorry about that.
Well, good. An apology is accepted. Don't do that. Okay, go ahead.
I'm very sorry. I just didn't believe that I'm ever going to get on the air.
Well, that's a good
I'll tell you what, that's not her fault. You can yell at Peter.
I did apologize to the lady.
Okay.
I am a respectful person.
Okay.
All right. My thing is, I'm a union guy.
Yeah.
I just got in the union. And my thing is, I got to pay $680 to get into the union.
Right.
And they're taking money out of my paycheck. But the thing is, I'm glad to be working right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that the unions are getting just broke down. And it's just...
What union? What union is it?
I'm a labor union. I'm in the labor union.
The laborers. Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing is, I'm out of Michigan, 1911. Woohoo! And the thing is that I got to give him a shout, man, because these guys, you know what? The thing is that, and also, I'm an ex-felon. And, you know, and you were saying that ex-felons have a hard time.
Right.
I haven't.
Not in the laborers.
You know what? I'm a fourth habitual felon, and I haven't had a hard time finding a job.
Well, wow. let me ask you this. How much are you making an hour? How much to start?
$17.50.
Well, you know what? Most laborers without a union, they get about $10 less an hour. They're probably making the minimum wage. That's the value of unions. What unions do? I mean, we sell our labor. So what unions do? Follow this one. That unions raise, artificially raise the selling price of labor. Because if it was at market value, we'd probably, you know, you'd be making $3 an hour. So what the unions are able to do by collective bargaining, by getting everybody together like that, can get people a decent wage. And Scott, I mean, I want to tell you that I just think that that's wonderful what's happened to you. I mean, particularly when someone's had that kind of trouble throughout their life.
Right.
And that you've secured a job with that kind of, pay.
Absolutely.
Stick with it, man. Don't drink.
Do you
got
to go to work tomorrow?
Yeah, wait a minute. Hold on here. Yeah?
That was my fourth felony, was my drinking and driving. That was my third drunk driving. That was my...
I hate to call you out in public, but you've been drinking tonight, right?
Yeah, I understood I made mistakes, but you know what? Just because I'm a felon doesn't make me a misfit to society.
No, I'm saying. So right now, you have the opportunity, and I can tell, and actually, I got to go right now, but it sounds pretty much like you've been drinking tonight. I'd love to drink and what have you, but make sure you hold on to that job. Don't drink and drive. And that's one of the things that I was talking about early, is we have to control our impulses. And I know, I mean, my father was a recovering alcoholic. So I'm not, you know, I'm talking from some experience, not directly, that you've got this incredible opportunity, $17.50 an hour. You're making like $35,000 a year. Take it and run with it, Scott. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Len says hello and misses Peter on the handball court. I play every Tuesday night, the same place, and sometimes, Len, where are you? But, hey, come on. It's a brotherhood. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, yeah. This is the religion department.
Oh, are we opening that up? Okay.
Yeah, the woman, the young woman, that. The teen, the 14-year-old with a nose ring.
Yeah, this story was... I thought, what? It's because of religion. The school wants her to take her nose ring out, okay? But she... Here, I got it. But she belongs to a church of some kind of piercing body...
The Church of Body Modification.
Modification.
A small group.
Altercation. I meant alteration.
It says,
you can tell the show's almost over.
Yeah, a small group unfamiliar to rural North Carolina where she is. Well, do you think?
The Church of all. What is it? Modification.
A body modification. But
boy,
one with a.
I should belong to that one with all my tattoos.
Yeah. And don't. Is this all right to say? Isn't your nose pierced?
It used to be.
Well, what are you? Doesn't unpierce.
I'm piercing free. It's closed up.
Yeah. Does it? Did it close?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I have a pierced ear.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, Peter.
Yeah.
Rad.
And my wife is always saying, why don't you start wearing an earring again?
That usually happens in some type of midlife crisis.
Yeah, yeah. I'm getting...
And get a Corvette.
Yeah, well, that's too expensive. I'm just saying. Just kind of a convertible and a 23-year-old girlfriend or something
right.
like that. Something like that. So, and her mother, it was a 14-year-old girl, and Nikki Iacono, that must be Romanian.
Oh, mm-hmm.
32 years old. So the daughter's 14, the mom's 32, which is, you know, that's actually, we always think that's too young. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I knew these people. They may be listening, too. We used to call them the partying grandmas. That they had grandchildren by the time they were in their early 40s, because they got married like when they were 16,
wow.
And they had the kids, and so they missed all the, you know, the...
All that kind of college fun.
Yeah, right. So, you know, so finally all the kids are gone, and they're out...
having a good...
What are you going home for, Herbie?
Let's go to Boogie Fever.
Yeah, all right. You go there?
I have a few times, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Up in Ferndale, about 9 Mile?
Yeah. I don't go to any bars, really, but...
So here's what mom says. Nikki, the mom of the teenager with the pierced nose that belongs to the church, the body modification, we pretty much flat out ask them, what guidelines are you following? What do you need to establish sincere religious belief? We were told that if we were Hindu or she was Muslim, that would be different.
Wow.
But, you know, it's like friends of mine belong to the Church of the Subgenius, but that's not the one.
Really?
Yeah.
We're the Church of the Dyslexic Dog. Yeah. I know where you and I are.
That's
We've
right.
Established
but,
that one.
The Church, the Universal Life Church.
Oh, sure.
And you can just get these certificates online, and two friends of mine have married, like, dozens of people.
No kidding?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. And you know one of them, at least.
I do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Who's to say what? You know, that's the deal. We have
Reverend Werby. Are you alluding
to
something?
Yeah, no, I'm not. I don't have that. They always say we have a religion. How's this go? I have a religion. You have a sect. They have a cult. But I mean, think about how some of these things started and the little stories they tell.
Yeah, for sure. No question.
Okay, folks, we got to go, and we will be back next week with America's longest-running talk show. Any talk show.
Yeah.
Any talk show.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Even though we don't get in the Ripley's, believe it or not, what is it, Guinness Book of World Record, because we only do it once a week. But there ought to be a category for that. But thank you for calling.
We don't need no stinking record.
Thank you for listening. And actually, I think love is blooming. But we will.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we'll talk with Stephanie about
that.
Yeah.
Stephanie, thank you so much for handling the phone tonight. I know it's been a wild night for you.
All right, sign up for the podcast if you missed any of this. And you can just go to WRIF.com and kind of weed your way through. Or go to my website, Peter Werby, WERBE.com. The podcast gets sent to you, no cost. We'll talk next week.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
Detroit's Rock Station. 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
Water is all around us. No wonder it's hard to imagine we're facing a water crisis. But we are. So that's why the American Planning Association brings you simple ways to save water at home and in your community. Learn more at planning.org. That's planning.org. A public service message from this station and the American Planning Association.
When I do it, I feel the blood rushing through me, and I keep going back for more.
Carmen Castillo is under the influence of Dana, her volunteer trainer.
Tuck your chin, Carmen.
By spending just one day a week with kids like Carmen, Dana helps them develop interests that keep them away from drugs. Be a coach, a mentor, a volunteer, because you have something to offer. Log on to helpyourcommunity.org or call 877-KIDS-313. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Energy Hog the team. Infiltrate the house and waste some energy.
No problem. It's got leaky windows
and no attic insulation.
Perfect. Now go wild and waste some wattage.
The Mitchell House. A house like many others. Except this one's under attack by Energy Hogs.
They show up anywhere energy is being wasted.
Talk to me, Hogs.
The washer, it's not Energy Star rated.
Outstanding. What about the thermostat?
Not programmable.
Looks like we're living high on the hog.
Only one person has the power to get rid of Energy Hogs. You.
Hold on. Someone's home.
Andy's got energy efficient light bulbs.
To find out how you can find Energy Hogs, log on to EnergyHog.org. You'll find fun games and lots of tips on making your home more energy efficient.
Now he's installing Energy Star appliances.
Not Energy Star. That's it. Get out of there. I'll get you, EnergyHog.org.
Hey, wait for me.
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
Saturday, September 25th, the first annual Rocktoberfest, and admissions totally free. Enjoy a taste of October with delicious food and beer sampling, live bands in the beer garden, fun in the U.S. Marines Mancard Village, including the beer pong finals, official Rocktoberfest merchandise, and much, much more. Get all the details now at WRIF.com. September 25th at Heritage Park in Taylor. Rocktoberfest, brought to you by Budweiser.
It's what we do.
And 101 WRIF, everything. That rocks. 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. The Constitution, our foundation document, contains so many rights that are so often violated by government. That's one of the reasons the Founding Fathers put all that stuff in the Bill of Rights, because they had little trust in the government, not to be capricious and oppressive and what have you, given their experiences. And there's everyone says, oh, you know, our Constitution, we give it great respect and we defend it and what have you. But it's odd that there's certain groups that when they defend the Constitution, some people, particularly on the right, go, oh, they're awful. They're un-American. I think of probably the most notable one, the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU. But there's lots of other groups that are working diligently to make sure that everyone's rights are protected. And sometimes it means the rights of people who are almost universally despised have to be protected, because if they can do things that shouldn't be done, that are unconstitutional, to the worst in society, that begins to leach into the rights of the rest of us. And specifically, I'm talking about an organization called the Center for Constitutional Rights. It's established in 1966, and it's dedicated to defending and advancing the rights guaranteed by the United States Constitution, but also the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is very important. And joining me from, let's call it the CCR for you rockers, of course, that's Creedence Clearwater Revival, but this is the Center for Constitutional Rights. And my guest is Rachel Maripol, and she's a staff attorney for the Center for Constitutional Rights. She's been named one of the best 40 under 40 lawyers by the National Law Journal, one of the Fab 50 top young litigators by American Lawyer Magazine, and she's co-editor of the Jailhouse Lawyer's Handbook for Prisoners Without an Attorney. And we join her in her office in New York City. Rachel Maripol, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, I was just thinking, giving all these accolades that you've had, hey, you could probably be a big Wall Street attorney or a big litigant and rolling in the millions. Why defend the Constitution when it looks, given your talents and how they're recognized, you could be doing something, you know, a lot different.
Well, I can't imagine that I could do anything that would be this fulfilling. I mean, I've had the pleasure of working with just some of the most amazing clients, people who are so brave in the face of incredible adversity and oppression, and yet, you know, are willing to come here and seek their day in court despite the fact that, you know, time and again, their rights aren't recognized. I can't really imagine working anywhere else.
So, though, when you talk about people like this, if we started naming the cases that the Center for Constitutional Rights takes on, and you can go to ccrjustice.org and see some of them, and we're going to talk about a few of them. A lot of them are the most despised people, yet maybe you could amplify what I said about, like, why would the CCR take on the case of accused terrorists at Guantanamo, for instance, as you have, and maybe tell us a little about that.
Sure. Sure. I mean, Guantanamo is a really important example because when CCR brought the first habeas petition, that's a challenge to someone's detention. When we brought the first habeas petition on behalf of a Guantanamo prisoner in 2002, it was just as you said, everyone thought, you know, these guys are the worst of the worst. They're terrorists. Who cares what happens to them? We couldn't even find local counsel in D.C. to write their name on the brief with us to help us file the brief. And yet, you know, less than a decade later, you have hundreds of lawyers from top law firms across the country who are involved in this struggle to represent Guantanamo detainees to get them their day in court. Now, how did we get to that change? And I think what's so important is to focus people on the right to due process. Now, whenever the government, just because the government says somebody is a terrorist, if they're not put to a burden of proof, if it's just executive say-so, you know, as a bad person, we can hold them outside the court's jurisdiction, we can do anything to them that we want, well, how do you know that you have the right person? And once information started coming out of Guantanamo, once attorneys succeeded in getting down there, we learned not only that many of the men down there were simply people who were in the wrong place at the wrong time, not the, you know, terrifying terrorists that the Bush administration had portrayed them to be, but also we learned that, you know, folks down there were being tortured. What was happening in the name of national security was just, you know, despicable. None of that information would have come forward if there weren't people willing to stand up and say, hey, you can't change the rules of the game just by calling someone a terrorist.
Well, I think you've answered it already, but I think that there's still a number of people listening that would think, yeah, okay, a few people got squashed that oughtn't have been, but on the other hand, we're pretty mad about what's happened on September 11th, and what about the ones that there's at least some credible evidence or confessions of people that have said that they were involved in 9/11 or other terrorist activity? Why should I care about their rights at all? It doesn't have any effect on me. I'm a law-abiding citizen.
Right. Well, once you start, and this is how you put it in the beginning, which is once you start trampling on the rights of those who are unpopular, it allows room for the government to single out others, and that kind of disrespect for the rule of law and for due process spreads. None of us are secure in the fact that we cannot be, you know, arrested and thrown in prison without process if we allow exceptions to be made, if we allow some people to be placed outside the law.
Well, I know that, for instance, we're talking about Guantanamo Bay, the detention center in Cuba, moving just a few miles inland. There is the country of Cuba, and they are uniformly criticized for the nature of their prisons, for holding political prisoners. And yet the CCR, the Center for Constitutional Rights, examines the rights and the quality and the nature of American prisons. How do American prisons stack up in terms of, the Constitution and also what we said earlier, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights? I mean, can we point fingers?
Well, the United States is good at talking about human rights abuses in other countries and not that great about recognizing human rights abuses in our own country. And, you know, I think if you look at domestic prisons, human rights abuses are just endemic to our prison society. The amount of abuse and mistreatment by guards and violence that occurs in United States prisons is really just deplorable. This is something that I've spent a lot of time looking at. You mentioned in the introduction about the fact that I've published a jailhouse lawyer's handbook, and this is a sort of self-help litigation guide that we provide for free to prisoners across the country who wish to file cases in federal court. You know, this is perhaps a prisoner has been beaten, they are exposed to unsafe conditions in their cell, perhaps they feel as though their freedom of speech is being unfairly trampled upon. We provide advice to prisoners as to how they can get into federal court, how they can make a complaint. Now, amazingly, the Virginia Department of Corrections has actually banned the Jailhouse Lawyer's Handbook from being sent to prisons, to Virginia prisoners, arguing that the handbook is detrimental to the security of the institution. Now, that's sort of, you know, it's an interesting story to take about sort of how prisons operate. If this idea that teaching prisoners about their rights and teaching them how to access the courts is dangerous, Moving more to the question of how suspected terrorists are treated in United States prisons, in 2002, CCR brought a case called Turkman v. Ashcroft, which is a challenge to the post 9/11 immigration detentions. You know, hundreds of Arab and South Asian men were rounded up across, you know, Brooklyn, New Jersey, really across the country, but it focused here in New York and New Jersey. And they were held on immigration charges, you know, people who had overstayed their visa or worked unlawfully, civil immigration charges, but they were really held in connection to the terrorism investigation and treated as terrorists because of their country of origin, because of their religion, until they were cleared of any connection to terrorism. Many of these men were held in, you know, it was actually a federal facility, the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn, and they were terribly abused. Upon entering the facility, men were slammed up against this T-shirt, which had a picture of the American flag on it that was hung against the wall at the entrance of the MDC. And, you know, they were shoved against the T-shirt and said, you know, welcome to America. You know, welcome to MDC. You're never getting out of here. Hmm. The T-shirt was stained with blood from all the men who'd been pushed up against it as they entered the facility.
Well, this is, shocking, and it's something that I think has gotten a little publicity in the press and in the media, but not too much, and probably wouldn't have gotten any if it wasn't for the Center for Constitutional Rights. My guest on the Peter Werbe Show is Rachel Maripol. She's a staff attorney with the Center for Constitutional Rights. The website is ccrjustice.org, and you can go to my website as well, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, and there'll be information about that as well. Let's go back to just the ordinary U.S. prisoners. I sort of chuckle there because of the extraordinary number of people imprisoned in the United States. And I was struck not so long ago when the continual release of people from death row, it turns out that they weren't given adequate representation, or that in general they were not guilty. And I started thinking that, you know, murder is pretty serious. What about breaking and entering? What about stick-ups and stuff like that? Well, how would you, can't imagine you put any percentage figure on this, but what percentage of people, or do you get an idea from all the work you've done, have been imprisoned in a manner that's not consistent with evidence or with reality or fact?
You know, it's incredibly hard to put a number on it, but we do know that, you know, the processes that lead to unlawful convictions, that lead to mistaken convictions, are eyewitness identification is the leading cause. So this is, you know, someone sees a crime occurring and thinks that they can remember and recognize the perpetrator of that crime. They go into court or they go to a police lineup and, you know, they are presented with individuals, including the defendant in a criminal case. And research has shown that these type of identifications are incredibly unreliable, that, you know, the way human memory works, it's just incredibly difficult for people to actually accurately remember an individual who they see in a high-stress situation for a very short period of time. We also know that police interrogations can frequently overcome an individual's will, such that, you know, they're so intimidating, police can lie to people in police custody. They can, you know, tell them that they already have evidence against them that they don't. They can be sort of very forceful and intimidating, even if they're not sort of acting outside the law by beating suspects. And that kind of interrogation can overcome someone's will, such that they start to say anything. They start to make up stuff. They no longer sort of can control what they're saying because they just want to please their interrogator. So we know that kind of police interrogation overwhelmingly can lead to false confessions. So I think what you have to do is take a step back and look at the number of convictions and the number of guilty pleas we get because individuals are in a situation where now there's a confession. You know, they're going to be convicted because they have a confession. They're going to be convicted because there's an eyewitness identification. And so many cases involve that type of evidence that, you know, I fear that there's a high percentage of individuals who could be wrongfully convicted.
Hmm. Rachel Maripol, I could imagine, and I can only imagine, because this isn't a phone-in show, that there are people thinking, well, all her sympathies seem to be with the criminals and none with the victims. How would you and Center for Constitutional Rights answer something like that?
Well, I do have sympathy for victims. You know, I think that it must be an incredibly difficult thing to be the victim of a crime. But I think that it's important when we're looking at the justice system that our country has created to recognize that, you know, we created this adversarial system for a reason. We decided that everyone deserves representation and that the way to get to the truth is to ensure that defendants have individuals representing them, have someone fighting for their rights so that we can better get to the truth. So it's not just stacked in favor of prosecutors.
Yeah, it is set up as a justice system, as an adversarial system. I mean, that's what supposedly is supposed to bring about justice. I mean, people get defense both individually and as a class. So, I mean, I think I'm asking those as the devil's advocate. Some people say I am in any event, but I think your work is highly commendable. Once you're in prison, and you were mentioning about violence and what have you, but there is other things that the Center for Constitutional Rights is concerned with. And one of the things, and this is what led us to this interview with Rachel Maripol, is what's called communication management units. And maybe rather than me fumbling around trying to define those facilities that are run by the Federal Bureau of Prisons, you could tell us what those are, what their functions are, and what the result is.
Sure. Well, the Communications Management Units, or CMUs as we refer to them, are sort of secretive isolation units that were first created by the Bureau of Prisons in 2006 and 2008. Now, these are units that are designed to isolate prisoners from the larger prisoner population and from the outside world to so-called manage their communications. It's interesting the way that the units came about. You know, under the Bush administration, the Bureau of Prisons floated a proposed rule laying out special units for terrorist prisoners. And whenever a federal agency wants to create a new rule, it has to propose the rule and open up a period for public comment on the rule. So way back in 2006, a bunch of civil liberties organizations examined this rule and commented to the Bureau of Prisons about, you know, how unnecessary these units are, how the conditions proposed would violate prisoners' constitutional rights. The Bureau of Prisons withdrew the rule and then silently created the units anyway. And it wasn't until after CCR filed a lawsuit challenging the communications management units that the Bureau of Prisons reissued a new proposed rule to codify what's going on. Now, basically, these units are experiments in social isolation. So prisoners are transferred to the unit, and they are denied all physical contact with anyone who would like to visit them. And they have extremely restricted access to visitation in general, non-contact visitation, and to phone calls. Now, the Bureau of Prisons recognize that sort of visitation, phone calls, access to family and to one's community is incredibly important in prison. It's one of the leading ways to reduce recidivism, to rehabilitate prisoners, is to keep them involved with their family, with their loved ones. These are the people who are going to provide support when they're released from prison eventually. So for that reason, the Bureau of Prisons has relatively liberal policies for its prison population. Prisoners get 300 minutes of telephone calls a month. They generally have pretty decent visitation, and visits can be, you know, you can, if you go to see a regular federal prisoner in a federal facility, you can hug them when you greet them, you sit at a table with them, you can play cards, you can share food. The prison visit can last quite a while, and these visits are incredibly important in terms of maintaining relationships. Now, without any sort of process, without notice, without an explanation, without an opportunity to challenge the transfer, prisoners within the federal system are designated to CMUs and sent to these units where they are restricted from communication with the outside world and with their loved ones. And, of course, as you would expect from a situation where there's sort of no review process set up to determine who gets moved into a restrictive unit, what we see are a series of discriminatory and retaliatory transfers. So you look at the population of these units as a whole, and I should say there's only two units in the country right now. One is in Terre Haute, Indiana, and one is in Marion, Illinois. You look at the population as a whole, and it's about 60% Muslim. That's compared to a 6% Muslim population in U.S. prisons in general in the federal system. So that's over 1,000% overrepresentation of Muslim prisoners within the CMUs. We also see that, you know, a lot of unpopular prisoners, people with unpopular political views, environmental activists, other sort of political prisoners, and jailhouse lawyers, prisoners who sort of advocate for themselves from behind bars and help other prisoners with their legal work. These are the type of prisoners who end up in the CMUs.
You know, we could have done a whole show on this and also perhaps a whole show on this next subject as well. Rachel Maripol is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show, and Rachel is the youngest grandchild of Ethel and Julius Rosenberg. They were executed as atomic spies in 1953 on the charge of conspiracy to commit espionage for the Soviet Union, and Rachel's father, Robert, was 6 years old when his parents were executed. How much does this shape your work and your views? I mean, it must be extraordinary.
Yeah, well, it's pretty unique, I will certainly say that. You know, I think growing up, I had a very personal sense of injustice and the idea that injustice can be perpetrated by the government just as it can be perpetrated by anyone else. I grew up with a healthy distrust of the government for that reason. And part of that and this idea of injustice and feeling very outraged by injustice is what led me to go to law school. More specifically, you know, I was drawn to prisoners' rights work in law school and ever since, just on a personal level from thinking about the time that my grandparents spent in prison at Sing Sing before they were executed, and in hearing my father's stories about, you know, prison visits when he was 4 and 5 years old and the important role that those played in shaping his, really, his only memories of his parents.
Go ahead. Well, I'm sorry to say, we actually are moving along, and it's unfortunate. This is this deserves a lot more. But I just wanted to ask, how old were you when you learned that your grandparents had been executed, and how does one process that? And has your father, Robert Maripol, spoken at all about this is extraordinary to be 6 years old and suddenly have your parents killed by the state. It's a two-part question, I guess. Your reaction, and if you know his.
Right. Well, you know, my father's primary reaction is in founding the Rosenberg Fund for Children, which, you know, provides support for children of political prisoners and targeted activists in this country. So I think he's taken the terrible experience that he had and turned it into something, well, I think very positive and very valuable. He's looked at the support he received growing up after he was orphaned from, you know, the progressive community, from his adoptive parents, and recognized the incredible role that played in allowing him to grow up as, you know, as a well-adjusted person and a great father, and tried to pass that on to other individuals who are having similar experiences as children. In terms of, you know, growing up myself, I just can't say when I first learned about it. It's something I always knew. You know, I think that I was probably exposed to discussion about my grandparents being taken to events, stuff like that, at such an early age that I knew about them before I could really have an understanding of what their case was about. I do recall being, you know, in first grade or second grade and my teacher asking us about what holidays occurred in the month of June. And I raised my hand and said something about people in New York commemorating the date of my grandparents' execution. she was flabbergasted, and it was, you know, I would pipe up with things like this throughout my childhood because, you know, I knew a bit about the case, but I didn't have quite enough awareness really to understand that it wasn't something that everybody else knew about necessarily.
And they were actually executed. I think I told you once before, they were executed on my birthday. In 1953. I've always had a connection to it on a the sort of a more than just the political level. For so many years, for decades and decades, it was the understanding of people on the left that this was a complete frame-up, that the Rosenbergs had not, your grandparents, Julius and Ethel, had not given any secrets to the Soviet Union for the atomic bomb. Now, and subsequent years, of course, that there was incredible judicial misconduct and prosecutorial misconduct, but there is some suggestion that your grandfather Julius Rosenberg may have in fact been a spy. Were they guilty?
Well, I think all the evidence points to the fact that my grandmother was completely innocent of anything, and the fact that the government knew that and executed her anyway. And I mean, that's really quite remarkable, and it's remarkable that understanding is standing up to the test of time and to all of the recent disclosures and, you know, more evidence that's coming out. Now, I don't think it's possible for us to ever know to a certainty, you know, what my grandfather was guilty of, if he was guilty of anything. But, you know, I will say that in my family, we've tried to have a sort of continuing, developing, and nuanced understanding of what happened. I think you have to have that sort of flexibility, because it's impossible to prove innocence at the end of the day. What I find most important, you know, thinking about the case from a historical perspective, is to look at all the misconduct that did occur, to look at the climate of the time during the McCarthy era and the hysteria and fear that really was the backdrop to their prosecution and to their execution, and work in my life and in my job to try to keep other things like that from mm-hmm. happening again.
Well, there was a worldwide movement against the execution. The Pope called for clemency, but because, as you said, Rachel Maripol, the tenor of the times was that President Eisenhower, who had the last say on it, refused to do anything. Another connection that you and I have to this execution is that we have both been in Havana and at the monument there to your grandparents. I sent you a photograph standing by it, and you said you have a similar one, which is about probably all that one can do when seeing this monument. But it's probably unique in the world, is it not?
I believe it is. I believe it's the only monument that exists in the world to my grandparents, yes.
Yeah. Well, I want to
quite a beautiful place.
And it's in just a little nondescript park in, I can't remember what district, but maybe we soon will get a chance, Americans, to legally visit the island. I mean, you and I did, of course. I'm a journalist. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with me. I feel like there's more that's been unsaid and unasked. But if you go to the Center for Constitutional Rights website, ccrjustice.org, you'll get all the information about the cases, the issues, the continuing threats and challenges to our civil liberties, and what CCR is doing to take on the upholding them. You can also, if you missed any of that, you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Rachel Maripol, thanks for being on my broadcast.
Oh, thank you. It's been great.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282. 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Water is all around us. No wonder it's hard to imagine we're facing a water crisis. But we are. So that's why the American Planning Association brings you simple ways to save water at home and in your community. Learn more at planning.org. That's planning.org. A public service message from this station and the American Planning Association.
Detroit Rock Station 101, The Riff.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on.
It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Like a nice skim, no-whiff latte?
Hey, you're the Red Defender, right?
Yes.
I saw you in the paper. You saved a runaway train.
That's right.
So shouldn't you be out saving something?
I already stopped a bank heist this morning.
Evil doesn't take a break.
Can I sit down for a second?
Hey, dial back the caffeine, man.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. One pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Line scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove line scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
So thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. I'm sure everyone is aware how much social, political, economic, and cultural energy has gone into just saying no to drugs. I mean, we have a prison industrial complex that is staffed with the people that have fallen afoul of the so-called war on drugs. Millions of people have been arrested for smoking marijuana, or as Detroit's John Sinclair once said, that I got put in jail for smoking flowers. Things are beginning to turn the corner a little on marijuana reform particularly. And, well, that it is. The war on drugs, as far as I'm concerned, has been a catastrophic failure and an attack on people's freedom of choice. But we're all concerned about what's the social and medical consequences of making marijuana or other drugs legal. Isn't that going to create problems in and of themselves? Wouldn't it be better, perhaps, to be a little kinder to marijuana smokers, like has just occurred in Denver, where now there's apparently just going to be a $1 fine? Well, let's take a look at all of this. I think this is going to really surprise and maybe even shock a few of you. The book I'm looking at is called Marijuana is Safer. Get that. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? The authors are Steve Fox, and Steve Fox is the director of state campaigns for marijuana policy. Also, Paul Armentano. He's the deputy director of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. And joining me on the phone here at on my show is Mason Tavert. He's the co-founder and executive director of Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation. That's Safer. His website is saferchoice.org. And thank you, Mason Tvert, for joining me. Appreciate
Thanks
your
for
time.
Having me.
Yeah. So you're out there in Denver, where we're reaching you in your office. And is it so that Denver now just has, or is it even Colorado that now has like a dollar fine?
Well, what happened recently is a panel appointed by our city's mayor recommended that the city have just a $1 fine for possession of up to an ounce of marijuana. There's been a long history here the last several years of voters calling for an end to marijuana possession arrests. And in 2007, the city established a panel to implement an ordinance that designates marijuana possession the city's lowest priority. And we felt as a panel that the fine should reflect that, that the fine should be the lowest possible.
Well, would the police still involve themselves in apprehension? I mean, you want to get malefactors off the streets, people that are doing harm to the social and political body of our communities and our cities. And if it's only a dollar fine, why should a police officer even bother?
Well, that's exactly the point. The city has voted to remove all penalties for marijuana possession, and there's really no logical or legal reason why police are still citing adults for marijuana possession here. They have every right to stop. The voters have asked them to stop on three separate occasions, and now this panel is looking for creative ways to really get the police to take notice and stop doing this. And by setting the fine at a dollar, the idea is that police should really recognize that this is a needless citation. It's, you know, really going to probably cost the city more in processing than it will, you know, in the fine. And it's time we stop punishing adults who are simply making the rational, safer choice to use a drug less harmful than alcohol.
No, I do want to talk about that. I want to just look, Mason Tvert, though, at the whole idea that that it opens the door to people using it perhaps much more frequently. If you don't have to worry about winding up behind bars, if you don't have to worry about fines, if you don't have to worry about becoming a criminal, because how many people over the last 40 or 50 years have been designated as a criminal because, as I quoted John Sinclair, Michigan's own, Detroit's own, that have been arrested for smoking flowers?
Well, there's certainly been, you know, millions. We see now nearly 900,000 Americans a year being cited or arrested or what have you for marijuana-related offenses. More than 90% of these are simple possession. And that's, you know, hundreds of thousands of people per year being designated criminals in our society, people who can lose their employment, lose their federal financial aid to go to college, lose their ability to adopt a child or even carry a gun or to, you know, do a whole lot of things that we as a society allow people to do. And it's all because they're using a substance that's less harmful than alcohol. And quite frankly, if more people were using marijuana instead of alcohol, or at least had that choice, right now they have no choice, maybe we would see fewer alcohol-related problems in our society and fewer alcohol-related incidents.
Mm-hmm. Well, beginning in the 1930s, when there was incredible anti-marijuana propaganda, and people, a lot of people are familiar with the film from the 1930s, Reefer Madness. And if people aren't or haven't seen that, it's an incredible cultural antique to watch. It's, I think it's even available online, certainly through Netflix or at your local independent CD DVD rental. But we've gone along to a point again when the war on drugs began of, you know, high hysteria about what drugs were doing to individuals and to our communities, and now we've kind of turned the corner on it in many ways. What tell us about the cultural trajectory beginning in the 1930s and why we're at where we are right now?
Well, sure. I think we really need to start by looking at the history of these true drugs prior to that. These are both substances, alcohol and marijuana, that have been used by cultures and societies for millions of years, hundreds of thousands of years. I mean, these are substances that are naturally occurring to an extent. In fact, marijuana has been around and been used for purposes of medicine as well as, changing state of mind prior to alcohol first being distilled and fermented and so on. And yet, as you pointed out, when we reached the 1930s, this was just after prohibition of alcohol, of course, which was a dismal failure, as we all know, these two drugs took a very different path. Obviously, alcohol took the path of commercialism, becoming the nation's drug of choice, if you will, people using it for everything from celebrating, toasting the bride and groom to happy hours and relaxing after work, whereas marijuana was really taken and made into a, it was demonized, as we all know. We've seen the Reefer Madness stories, and a lot of this was racially driven, racially motivated, and some of it was economically motivated. There's certainly evidence that the DuPont family had a hand in this, and the Hearst publications empire.
All of which are interesting. By definition, you have to go over this kind of quickly. If people are going, why would DuPont? Why would Randolph Hearst put in? Just go Google it, folks, and that'll all come up.
Exactly.
This is not unknown history.
Yeah, and we talk about this in the book. We do go over the history of how this situation came about with marijuana. Essentially, William Randolph Hearst was a publisher, and we've all heard of the term yellow journalism, which is sensationalistic journalism. And William Randolph Hearst, for various reasons, had some prejudices against Mexicans and really used his newspapers to put those crazed stories about the drug-fueled Mexican who's raping the white women and stuff like that. And then we saw the jazz culture and marijuana taking, hold there, and black musicians beginning to use it down in New Orleans and whatnot. And, of course, this country has a vast history of prejudice towards blacks, and we therefore scapegoated blacks and really, talked about that whole concept of how marijuana would actually make a black man look a white man in the eye and so on. And we worked our way into the 50s and 60s. We heard marijuana will drive you crazy. We heard that it'll make you stupid. It'll make you amotivated. And ultimately now we've gotten to a point where our federal government just tells you that if you use it, you're a loser. And really what we're seeing is a campaign to make people fear and think marijuana is harmful. And that's what we talk about in this book, is that we really as a society need to talk about the actual harms associated with marijuana. It is not that harmful. We're not saying it's absolutely harmless. There are certainly some people who shouldn't use it, and we talk about that in the book. But we should talk about it relative to substances that are similar, like alcohol, in that we use these drugs for the same reason: to elevate mood, to relax, to celebrate, to, make experiences more exciting, like going to a concert, seeing a movie, what have you. And there's, since marijuana causes far fewer problems, there's really no reason why we should be prohibiting adults from making the choice to use it.
Mm-hmm. Mason Tvert is my guest. He's the executive director of Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation. Website is saferchoice.org. The book is Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? And that is marijuanaissafer.com. There'll be a link on my website to both those, peterwerby.com. I think we ought to get more to policy stuff, but the stories of marijuana prohibition history are absolutely incredible. And we could probably talk for a whole hour about the person that was head of the Federal Narcotics Bureau, Harry Anslinger, who was about as crazy or crazier than J. Edgar Hoover. And I guess what sticks out in my mind when you said about African-American jazz musicians, Anslinger, correct me if I'm wrong, had an idea that they were going to arrest the major jazz players of the late 30s, like Count Basie and Duke Ellington and all of this. I mean, these American that are legends of our cultural history, but I guess it got squashed the last moment and he couldn't carry it out, much to his dismay.
Well, we did see a number of jazz musicians get arrested, and this is
sure. Lenny Bruce, the comedian, he got
You're exactly right. We've seen this trend and it continues today. Tommy Chong was sent to prison for having his name on a bong. We've seen, you know, countless people. Look at Michael Phelps being demonized, losing various contracts as a result of a photo of him at a party where he was admittedly acting obnoxious and drunk, but yet no one cares about that. We only care about the fact that he was smoking some pot.
Mm-hmm. And John Sinclair, who I've quoted twice.
Of course, and the Beatles, you know, the band on the run. I mean,
yeah. John Sinclair was sentenced to 9.5 to 10 years in Jackson State Prison in Michigan for possession of 2 marijuana cigarettes, or joints, as they called them. Well, let's get into this. I mean, people are still probably shaking their head. Look, any intoxicant has risks connected with it, as we know, although coffee has gotten a better name lately. Here's what I think. I consider myself a social drinker, and I really am. I have no more than one drink a night. Sometimes on the weekend I'll have two. Sometimes during the summer I'll have a gin and tonic at lunch and maybe a beer with a pizza at dinner. That's it. I can't remember the last time I even got a buzz on drinking. But with the marijuana that's currently circulating, it's a little harder to be like a social marijuana smoker. I mean, you have one or two, you inhale one or two puffs and, boom, you're gone.
Well, I would say that, number one, that would vary by person and by the amount of marijuana. I mean, despite the federal government's claims that marijuana is far more potent now, the average sample of marijuana seized by police is actually no different than it was more than 20 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, it's around 5% THC. Now, is the absolute most potent marijuana around now more potent than the most potent marijuana back in the day? Yeah, slightly. But what's interesting to point out is that, you know, there's never been a marijuana overdose in history. Regardless of its potency, it's never been found to contribute to any serious problems. It's still far less addictive than alcohol. And, you know, just like with alcohol, we have beer, we have wine, we have hard liquor, we even have Everclear and you know, 151, these super, super sure. potent alcohol beverages. There's also different ranges of marijuana, and if you take, you know, one puff or a little bit of, you know, these days a lot of people aren't even smoking marijuana anymore. They're eating it, or you can use it with a vaporizer where you're not actually smoking. You can really tailor the amount you use to your preference, and many people use it socially and have no problem with that, just like having a couple drinks. I mean, if you're a 120-pound woman, having a drink is going to have an intoxicating effect on you. So there's certainly no reason why we would prefer they do that as opposed to, say, smoking a little bit of pot and actually having more control over the situations they put themselves in and control over their actions.
You know, it's interesting. I'm anticipating listener reaction, and some people, I bet, are getting pretty angry. They're thinking, wait a minute, I've done everything I could to try to keep my kids off of drugs, and including marijuana, and you know, I've enrolled them in DARE, and here Peter Werby has Mason Tvert on saying, well, you know, it's not so bad. But I'll tell you, I, a few months ago, had a man on that was a wine expert, but it was interesting because he was talking about, you know, the history of wine, you know, who produces it, how crime figures involved in, you know, in Europe and wine and stuff like that. But he certainly talked about the qualities of wine that made it an attractive, item to consume. And not, I mean, I certainly didn't get anyone saying, you know, you're encouraging people to drink wine.
Of course, so, and no one has a problem with Super Bowl advertisements touting the fact that you can only have fun at a party if you're drinking their beer product. I mean, you know, we live in this culture where alcohol is completely acceptable and marijuana has been shunned. But, you know, quite frankly, any adult or any parent, I should say, who would prefer their child drink as opposed to using marijuana is crazy. You know, we have thousands of young people dying every year from alcohol overdoses and other alcohol-related problems. We see, you know, on college campuses alone, 500,000 alcohol-related injuries, 70,000 alcohol-related sexual assaults, and yet there's no evidence that, you know, ties marijuana to any of these serious problems. In fact, what's typically found is that marijuana makes people less aggressive, less violent, less reckless, less likely to take chances. There's really no good reason why we'd want to keep this information from young people. Now, don't get me wrong, as we say in the book, we do not want young people using marijuana, people, you know, juveniles, high school kids, because there is still some questions out there about its effect on brain development and so on. But it's really important to point out that, you know, we need to be honest about these drugs, because when you tell a young person that marijuana is so horrible and then either they try it or a friend tries it and sees that it's not that big a deal, they're going to think you're lying about everything. And they're also going to, you know, potentially try other drugs that they've been told are bad as well. And they may not actually think that alcohol is that bad because, you know, we don't tell. When's the last time you saw a TV commercial saying you can die from drinking too much? We don't have those. Yet we have tons saying that you're a loser if you smoke pot.
How about the argument that marijuana is a gateway drug? It's illegal, and so if you smoke marijuana, maybe the same guy has some crack or some cocaine or some heroin or,
The point you just made is you actually answered that question. Every study on the gateway theory is basically debunked. It's said that the only gateway theory there is that because marijuana is illegal, people are exposed to a black market where there are other illegal products, like you just said. There's no physiological reason why someone who uses marijuana would want to use any other drug. In fact, 9 out of 10 marijuana users never use anything other than marijuana or never even try any other harder drug. What's interesting here is that most people, if not everyone, tries alcohol or tobacco prior to trying marijuana, yet we don't seem to label those as gateway drugs that we can't possibly allow. When we look at this country compared to, let's say, the Netherlands, people constantly talk about Amsterdam and, oh my gosh, marijuana is used openly and what a horrible signal that sends to kids. Well, people in number one, there's more marijuana use per capita in the United States than there is in the Netherlands. And number two, young people try marijuana on average at a younger age in the United States than they do in the Netherlands, where it's used openly by adults in coffee shops. So we're really not sending a dangerous message to young people by allowing adults to use marijuana. We are sending a dangerous message when we say, don't use marijuana, but alcohol is okay. That's a dangerous message.
In fact, the book is Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? It's published by Chelsea Green, and I've been giving websites. ChelseaGreen.com is an excellent publisher. I would highly recommend that. My guest is the co-author of the book, Mason Tavert. And interestingly, the police attitudes are beginning to alter as well. Norm Stamper, the former police chief of Seattle, Washington, has written the introduction to the book. What are the foreword? What do you find is there a sea change among police officers, or is it just sort of people like Norm Stamper?
Well, there's certainly lots of cops out there that agree that marijuana is not a big problem when it comes to their everyday jobs. Norm actually talks about this in the foreword, and when he talks about this subject, he points out that if you ask a cop when's the last time he had to deal with someone who was aggressive or violent or completely belligerent because they had been using marijuana, you know, these cops scratch their head and say, well, you know, I guess I've never had to do that. Typically, they just find some marijuana on someone and they cite them or arrest them. It's not something where they have to, you know, really worry about that person being violent. When it comes to, and then you ask these cops, well, what about the last time you were dealing with an unruly or belligerent person under the influence of alcohol? These guys check their watches and they're like, well, you know, I do that every few hours.
Sure.
Because obviously, you know, what between bar fights, riots, these are all alcohol-fueled things. And there's no doubt in the scientific literature that alcohol does contribute to violent, aggressive, and reckless behavior.
Homicide, spousal abuse, child abuse.
Exactly. Domestic violence is a huge one. Sexual assault's a huge one. Property damage. I mean, typically when someone's under the influence of marijuana, they don't think it would be cool to, say, throw something off a balcony. But yet we see that taking place with young people and alcohol all the time.
You know, it's interesting. I do a phone-in talk show as well, and I always tell people, I would say the audience, that in this particular case, probably like 85% for legalization. So I said, don't call me with, the obvious, hey, man, why is, you know, that? I said, give me some reasons why that there should remain illegal. One interesting thing, I don't know if this is a reason in and of itself, said that intoxication while driving from marijuana, you can check that with alcohol. We're not going to know if anybody just did like, you know, four bong hits of, you know, the best marijuana that exists, and they're stoned out of their gourd. I mean, maybe they'd be driving like 14 miles an hour, but you wouldn't be able to tell.
Well, you really answered your question right there. You know, number one, I'll say that we do not encourage anyone to use any substance that could be intoxicating while driving. We do talk about that in the book. But it's really important to point out the effects marijuana has on people and the effect on driving. Now, as you pointed out, people, you know, it's a joke, but it's also true. People who use marijuana tend to drive slower. They also tend to drive more cautiously. And what's really interesting is they also tend to not drive at all. There have been studies done where they actually took people out to a closed course, had them use marijuana, and then had them drive in the course. And what they found, they had no idea this was coming, but many of the people said, you know what, I don't feel comfortable driving, because they recognized that they were under the influence, they recognized they were impaired, so they didn't even try to drive, whereas those people using alcohol tended to be more reckless. You know, we don't call it liquid courage for nothing.
People, give me the wheel.
You know, people think that, yeah, there's no problem, I can do this. They drive faster, they make more careless decisions, and there's very, you know, scientific elements to back this up. These have to do with the effects that these drugs have on your system. And there's actually the latest research shows that, and the largest studies that have been done show that individuals with a significant amount of THC, the active, the psychoactive ingredient marijuana, people who have actually used marijuana are less likely to be culpable in a traffic accident than people with a legal amount of alcohol in their system.
Wow.
But if you have a .04, you've had two beers, you're headed home, you're perfectly legal to drive, you are more impaired and more likely to be in an accident than someone who is who's used marijuana in the last couple hours.
Mason Tvert, let's do this. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just looked at the clock, and I want to, I mean, we've had a war on drugs. We, from what we've spent over the last 30, 40 years, we probably could have afforded the healthcare system that some people say we can't afford, probably $1 trillion, or I hear all sorts of figures. But regardless, is there political will? Is there, are there legislators and at a national level, representatives and senators that are willing to say, hey, look, there was a war on drugs. Drugs won.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we at politically with this?
Well, you know, just to address the whole drugs won, I would say that, you know, nature won, because people have wanted to use drugs and have been compelled to since the beginning of our you know, cultural existence. But there is a whole lot of traction, as you've been saying. You know, we see cities like Denver. We see states like California, where there's now a significant majority in support of taxing and regulating marijuana and treating it like alcohol. Michigan recently passed a medical marijuana law, which is, you know, this notion that prior to that passing, someone who has cancer or who has AIDS and is wasting away is perfectly able to use a hardcore narcotic like OxyContin or codeine, but not able to use a naturally occurring substance that doesn't cause any serious harm, is insane. I mean, you know, now we're starting to see, you know, people are getting a little freaked out about medical marijuana dispensaries in California, yet they don't have any problem with the Walgreens on every corner where they're distributing hardcore, potentially deadly narcotic drugs. So I think that it's really important to get people to start thinking about the nature of the substances that we put in our bodies. You know, everyone from Dr. Andrew Weil, a longtime, well-recognized health expert, to political folks like, you know, Dennis Kucinich, Ron Paul, Barney Frank, Jared Polis is a congressman here from Colorado. These guys are all starting to step up and say, wait a minute, hold on.
Well,
this substance is not that harmful. We need to start treating it that way.
The book is Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? It's published by Chelsea Green. You can go to chelseagreen.com. The book is listed at marijuanaissafer.com. My guest has been Mason Tvert. He's the executive director of Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation. His website, saferchoice.org. You can go to my website. And boy, I hope you're not driving and trying to get all this down. That'd be worse than any intoxicant.
Indeed.
Yeah, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Mason Tvert, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? Or are you stuck in a tax payment plan that's getting you nowhere? The IRS is now taking very aggressive actions, such as bank levies and wage garnishments. If you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debts for less than you owe, remove penalties and interest, and protect you from bank levies and garnishments. As a hardworking American, you do have rights. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
101 The Riff.
Water is all around us. No wonder it's hard to imagine we're facing a water crisis. But we are. So that's why the American Planning Association brings you simple ways to save water at home and in your community. Learn more at planning.org. That's planning.org. A public service message from this station and the American Planning Association.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
Play ball!
Now pitching, Dave Black.
Dave is about to catch his opponent off guard. Not with his nasty fastball, no. Instead of a fastball, Dave will be hurling a tomato.
And the pitch.
Ooh. Using tomatoes as baseballs won't go over well with anyone. But if you're looking to hit the ball further and throw better, eating a healthy diet that includes fruits and vegetables is a home run. Packed with nutrients, they could help keep your body healthy and strong, giving you the energy you need to hit that grand slam. When you look at it this way, eating tomatoes is playing hardball against the competition. Run, throw, think, eat better. Can your food do that? Find out at smallstep.gov.
That's smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
McGruff, the crime dog, here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff Comic Activity Book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride. And it's full of games and puzzles too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write. Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time. You'll be helping me take a fight on a crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ad Council.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Rocktoberfest, September 25th at Heritage Park in Taylor. Details online at WRIF.com. Presented by Budweiser and 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.